You would have been our only draw. You would have probably died.
Are you warm? Is it warm or no? No, okay. Long. I'm, well, it's because of all the technical problems I'm like. One minute. 6 minutes, yeah.
I don't know if this was not accurate earlier. Oh, sorry. I don't know if it was now.
Yeah, no,
but I don't know when it will be, so.
I have the little, I can't see that. 5:59. No. Oh, okay.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome back. If you were here earlier, we are reconvening to our regular meeting at 6 p.m. for Tuesday, November 12th, 2019's meeting of the City Council. Can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember George.
Here.
Councilmember Storton.
Here.
Councilmember Paulding.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Barnidge.
Here.
And Mayor Ray Russom.
Here. Please join me for a moment of reflection. Thank you. Would you please join me in the flag salute this evening?
Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Since I get the honor of reporting to you every 2 weeks, I'm not going to take the podium right now to tell you what we've been up to. You're all sitting here, so that's good. So for item 5, I have a question. There's a lot of people in the crowd right now, and we have 2 items on our agenda after the closed session. So I want to take a moment and just survey. How many of you are here for item 11A, the vaping ordinance? Okay, and how many of you are here for item 11B, the council compensation? Just a few? Okay, so since I didn't see anyone for the vaping one, it's been suggested by Councilmember George that we reverse that order so that people who can go home earlier if they're more interested. So since we have people here for the one but not the other, then if with the council's approval, perhaps we can reverse 11A and 11B and hear 11B first. All right, thank you, Councilmember George. So we'll hear those opposite, but then proceed with the agenda as published otherwise. So that takes us to item 5A, closed session announcements. I'll throw that over to the city attorney.
Thank you, Mayor. This evening, the city council met in closed session for a city attorney evaluation and for a real property negotiation involving property located at 400 Old Ranch Road. As a result of that closed session, there was no reportable action.
Thank you. And will someone please move that all ordinance presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Can we all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. None opposed? And the motion carries unanimously. That takes us to item 6A. This is an honorary proclamation declaring November 2019 as National Hospice Palliative Care Month. And will Diana Federico meet me at the podium? Welcome.
Thank you.
This is an honorary proclamation declaring November 2019 as National Hospice Palliative Care Month. Whereas hospice and palliative care empower people facing a serious or life-limiting illness to live as fully as possible, ensuring people dignity, choice, and quality of life. And whereas the hospice model involves an interdisciplinary, team-oriented approach to treatment, including expert medical care, quality symptom control, and comprehensive pain management as a foundation of care. And whereas beyond providing physical treatment, Hospice attends to the patient's emotional, spiritual, and family needs and provides family services like respite care and bereavement counseling. And whereas in an increasingly fragmented and broken healthcare system, hospice is one of the few sectors that demonstrates how healthcare can and should work at its best for its patient. And whereas a growing body of peer-reviewed research indicates that timely access to hospice and palliative care can decrease hospitalizations and emergency room visits and increase quality of life for patients and family caregivers, and every year more than 1.56 million Americans living with life-limiting illness and their families received care from the nation's hospice programs in communities throughout the United States, and whereas more than 355,000 trained volunteers contribute 16 million hours of service to hospice programs annually in the U.S., and whereas Central Coast Hospice, Dignity Health Hospice, Hospice of San Luis Obispo County, and Wilshire Hospice provide hospice care and bereavement counseling respectively to individuals within the County of San Luis Obispo, and hospice and palliative care organizations are advocates and educators about advanced care planning that help individuals make decisions about the care they want. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Karen Ray Russom, Mayor of the City of Arroyo Grande, do hereby proclaim November 2019 as National Hospice and Palliative Care Month, and encourage citizens to increase their understanding and awareness of care at the end of life and to observe this month with appropriate activities and programs. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank
and we'd
you
love
so much.
To hear about
yes,
what you're doing.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you all so much again. This proclamation recognizes four hospices that serve the community and county of San Luis Obispo. This county is actually one in 23 in the U.S. that have both a volunteer and a medical hospice. It's an honor to serve the members of our community, and thank you again so much for the recognition.
Thank you for everything you do.
Thank you.
That takes us to item 7. This is community comments and suggestions. This is your chance to come to the dais for 3 minutes and tell us, talk to us about anything that is not published on tonight's agenda. Mrs. Oste.
Good evening. My name is Linda Oste, and I live in the village of Arroyo Grande. I'd like to offer an invocation. God of mercy, we ask for your blessings on all those who have served their country in the armed forces. We ask for healing for the veterans who have been wounded in their body and soul in conflicts around the globe. We pray especially for the young men and women who have and are coming home from overseas, Iraq, Afghanistan, wherever, with injured bodies and traumatized spirits. Bring solace to them. O Lord, may we pray for them when we cannot pray, when they cannot pray. Have mercy on all the veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan. Bring peace to their hearts and peace to the regions they fought in. Bless all the soldiers who served in non-combative posts. May their calling to serve continue in their lives in many positive ways. Give us all here present tonight creative vision to see a world that, growing weary with fighting, moves to affirming the life of every human being and so moves beyond war. We ask this through Christ our Lord. Amen. Jesus, I trust in you. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to come forward for public comment?
Good evening, Mayor Russom and council members. You saw me last month, and you'll probably see me more in the months to come. I'm Jamie Sambamatsu, director of a local child care center here in Arroyo Grande, but I'm representing the We Are the Care initiative that started in May of 2019. We Are the Care was born out of Where's the Care town hall meeting that was hosted in San Luis Obispo, May 2019, where a group of early childhood professionals, people from the business community, families, and government employees and officials were partnering to address the local child care crisis. One area of challenge and opportunity in addressing child care is building options that accommodate the needs of families who work or study during evening hours and weekends. A recent report published in the California Child Care Resource and Referral Network found that many parents work outside the traditional Monday to Friday 9-to-5 schedule, and while finding child care in general can be hard, during these non-traditional hours it is particularly difficult. I'm pleased to share with you that Cuesta College has recently stepped up to begin providing evening hour care from 3:15 to 9 p.m. for their students and those in the community. A program that can support the needs of different sectors of our community, including evening students, employees in the hospital industry, and other sectors requiring non-traditional hours. In the month of November, we've chosen to honor and think of our military service members. A part of their service includes their families. The military is the largest employer in the U.S. and has created a system of child care that is highly regarded. There is a commitment to quality care, and most of their child care programs have achieved national accreditation. The federal government covers 2/3 of the cost of care, which reduces the burden on families, while at the same time increases the accountability for quality. Deborah Phillips, a Georgetown University professor who has studied the history of the military child care program, points out that it's a matter of pride, really, to work in a military child care program, and child care professionals are the jewel in the crown of the military. So today, during the month of Veterans Day, I invite us, in addition to honoring our soldiers, we also honor the professional men and women who guard and nurture and educate our military families and young children. And while I'm at it, I invite us to honor the child care professionals in our own community who are performing the same noble service for our local young ones. I encourage us to take both Cuesta College and the military examples as inspirational ones as we look forward in the future for our county. The We Are the Care initiative seeks to raise awareness of the lack of quality of child care options in our community and to persist in improving and expanding our local system. Just last week, San Luis County Board of Supervisors voted $20,000 to put towards this study in looking for the need and solutions to it in working with this initiative. Our goal is that San Luis County becomes the most family-friendly county in California, and we hope you will join our mission. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to come forward for public comment on items not on tonight's agenda? Okay, seeing no one, I'll close community comment, and that takes us to our consent agenda for items 8A through 8E. Would anyone like to pull those for separate consideration?
I just have a question on 8C, but it's just a question.
Okay.
I have a question on the same.
And I have a question on 8E, so why don't we address those questions first, and then we'll go to public comment so people can have their chance to bring something to our attention there, too. So, Councilmember George, do you want to start with item 8C?
Yes, the question is on page 2 of the report. It says, last paragraph, in October 2019, it was determined to leave sound walls in the project documents since a majority of the ballots had not been received. What does that mean?
We're going to have Robin, our city city engineer, give you a little bit of history.
Robin, I had the same question, so you only have to answer it once.
Good.
Thank you.
Don't ask me to repeat it, okay? Good evening, Mayor and Council members. We sent out ballots, and I believe you guys received copies of the ballots that went out to benefited receptors. This was a requirement of Caltrans in order to remove the sound walls altogether from the project. We ended up with two different sound walls, but neither sound wall came back with the majority. So even though we had a large number of people wanting the sound walls, we still never met a majority. So we could elect to extend the ballots and see if we could get the rest of the ballots in. Or what we decided to do is, because of the critical time frames, especially with SLOCOG, we wanted to keep the project moving. So at this stage, we've elected to keep the sound walls in. And we're hoping that when we get into the actual design phase and start looking at these sound walls, that we can bring this benefited receptor group in and determine really or not whether they're practical.
Okay, thank you. That answered my question.
Thank you.
That answered yours.
Yes, thanks.
And item 8E, Jim, on page 2, this is the one where we're asking about the housing element grant, and that was the upshot of my question and why it came back. It says on page 2, staff intends to submit an application by the November 30th, 2019 deadline to receive funds to complete one or more of the following activities that automatically demonstrates a nexus to accelerating housing production, blah, blah, blah. My question is, what does one or more mean? How do I know what we're approving or what we're going to be applying for? There are just, if people aren't looking at this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 six different things on here, and none of them seem to address the one that we're talking about.
Thank you, Mayor. Jim Bergman, City Manager. So on October 8th, 2019, we came to your council and talked about applying for SB2 grant money from the state. And this SB2, part of this was trying to implement new housing goals and abilities to create housing in cities. This is something that the state recently passed, and they put it on to other agencies within the state to make the program and make the program happen quickly. So first of all, we're reacting to a very quickly developed program from the state, where they part of SB2 was not only did they say we're going to take away discretion, we're going to do a lot of things to make cities move and to adapt. They also put out a little bit of money here. So our reading has always been that the SB2 money is connected with how are you going to implement and make sure that more housing gets built. Generally, we have always understood that as that's different from the policy document of the housing element. We did include in here the frequently asked questions, can you use the money for the housing element? And they said yes, if it's doing something to show that you're implementing, or it's going to make it easier for people to build these houses. So at this point, we have till November 30th to put in this application. Staff has been meeting and has talked about what's more than likely going to happen to housing in this city. Part of what we're concerned with is the state is going to say, cities, you no longer have discretion. You have to approve almost by right any housing that meets your zoning throughout your city. However, they did link us, give us the ability to have objective standards. So if we said, okay, we want to make sure that the architecture looks like this, that would be okay. So really our intent here is to try to get a successful application into the state by November 30th, even though this is all in flux, and try to anticipate what's going to be the most useful for our community to protect its character and our feeling in this town, as well as look at traffic impacts or other impacts from development, and try to get that money to go to building these implementation documents that will be implementing parts of the housing element. So, long-winded answer.
Yeah, but you didn't answer my question.
Okay, sorry.
So my question is, we continued this because the question was, at League of Cities, we were told by PlaceWorks that there was grant monies available to cover this. And this
is the housing element.
This is the consulting for that.
Okay.
And so you're saying that, yes, that's going to cover this $63,000?
No. So there's a statement in here, frequently asked questions from the state, saying, no, it might be able to cover your housing element, but it's got to be a part of the housing element that really implements these housing efforts that the state
wants.
I
hear that, but what does that mean in terms of this $63,000?
So every 5 years, every city has pretty much have to pay for their housing element to get that done. We're saying that there's going to be money, we're going to need money after the housing element is adopted to get these standards. So if it's washing money, I guess. We're going to pay $50,000 for a housing element, but we're going to get money from the state to try to develop tools that are going to implement that housing element. If we went and just said, hey, we're going to use it for our housing element. We're also going to have to start to dig into all of these things right now before the housing element is even built and talk about how we're going to get that money from the state so that they want to approve.
So it's just a matter of timing.
It is. It's absolutely
okay.
Timing.
Okay. And thank you. All right. Any other questions?
I had one question. Okay. I'm not sure when we're going to see, and I know I've asked this before, what's going to come back to us as far as when the consultant is chosen to start working on the updating mm-hmm. the housing element. So I just want to make sure I know this. Some of the things they're talking about, the ADUs that some of the mm-hmm. grant applications could go for.
That's
I just
right.
want to make sure we have tiny homes inserted in there okay. somewhere. And I hate to keep bringing that up, but I don't want to like miss the opportunity mm-hmm. and then later on have to add it when they've done all their work. So I just want to make sure some of their homework, whoever we choose, includes that.
Absolutely. Staff is already anticipating ADUs. How could those be implemented faster and easier for people? Tiny homes is something that we'd love to get more information and analysis and have discussions with the community about. And then also we see the objective design and development standards as being very important to this city to be able to at least have some hope in controlling negative impacts from certain housing developments.
And is the council going to have any input into this list of six things, which six we would like to pursue?
I assume you can do that right now today if you want to, or we can have a special we can do this on one of your agendas, or it could be part of the housing element development plan where we're doing a bunch of outreach to different bodies and committees and the community members, a lot of stakeholders.
When will that begin?
2 months.
2 months is what I'm hearing from the audience.
Okay. And just to clarify for those people at home, the audience included Director Robeson. So.
That's right. Thank you, Bill.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions? All right, so at this time I'll open up public comment for items 8. If you want to speak on anything, item 8A through 8E, please come forward. Okay, well, seeing no one, I'll close public comment and bring it back to hear the will of the council.
I would move for approval of items 8A through 8E.
Second.
Any discussion? We have a motion and a second. Can we get a roll call, please?
Mayor Pro Tem Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
Councilmember Starton?
Yes.
Councilmember George?
Yes.
And Mayor Ray Russell?
Yes. We have no items 9 or 10 this evening, so that takes us to items 11. We have two items here, and if you missed us for the first few moments of the meeting, due to just making sure that people can get home to their families as fast as they can, the majority of people here for public comment were for item 11B, so we'll be beginning with that one. So with that, I will throw this to Director Bergman.
All right. Thank you, Mayor, Council members. Again, Jim Bergman, City Manager. About 2 months ago, your council asked for staff to come back in a reasonable amount of time to give information about council compensation and specifically to give a comparison with what other cities in our county do as compensation for council members. Compensation for elected council members is authorized and guided by California state law. It does state that maximum compensation for city council members is based on categories on the size of your community. So we fit into the category of 35,000 or less as a population. And that state law has said that cities may compensate each council member up to $300 per month for their service. Being state law, they don't update it very often, so they also put in a 5%, we assume, some sort of cost of living factor so that they wouldn't have to go back and change state code frequently. So it does allow for each year that you can increase that number by 5%, and if there's a period of time between the last time you updated salaries, you can also use those 5%, but you can't compound like the interest or the amount you're going to get. any change, it's pretty important that the state says that any time a council talks about this compensation, that it doesn't happen in the current tenure of the council who makes the decision. So any action, if you wanted to adjust the compensation for the council, would not occur until December 2020, when at least one member of the council has switched seats. State law does allow the mayor additional compensation. It does not have a limit, and it is not subject to the provision that says that it has to take place after the change has to go into effect after an election. So theoretically, if this council wanted to raise a mayor's compensation, they can do so starting today or whenever you would deem it appropriate. State law also states that cities can also provide health and welfare benefits if they're also available to other staff. So that is what we consider health, medical insurance, dental, and vision. In this staff report, I have we have two of the three screens working here. For people following at home or in the audience, if you have a staff report, there are several bullet points that show from 1966, 1986, 1997, 1999, 2000, and 2008 has been times where the City Council of Arroyo Grande has reviewed these policies and made adjustments. Also in the staff report is a pretty important table here that shows all the cities in this county, their population, how much the monthly salary for each council member is. We also have a column that shows additional mayor salary, then a total for mayor salary, and then the last time each city's council has adjusted or made changes to their compensation. So you can see at the top of this chart, Arroyo Grande, we have a population just under 18,000. Each council member is entitled to a $405 monthly salary. We do not have a separate salary for the mayor. So total salary for the mayor and council members each are $405, and this was last increased in 2008. As you can see, if we go down the list with Atascadero, Grover, so Atascadero, Grover, Paso Robles is $600 a month. Looks like Morro Bay is $500 a month. Pismo Beach is $772.20 a month. And San Luis Obispo is $1,224 for their council members. You'll see that the rest of the cities other than Arroyo Grande do provide extra compensation for their mayor, and that ranges from $150 in Atascadero and Grover Beach, $200 in Morro Bay and Paso Robles, $300 in Pismo Beach, and San Luis Obispo, $526. The table two below that is also looking at what the other cities do when it comes to those medical or health and welfare benefits. So it looks like all the cities, with the exception of Grover Beach, offers medical, dental, and vision to their council and to their mayor. Some cities give that compensation also to any dependents that those council members would have, and that looks like most of them. It looks like Atascadero and Morro Bay do not offer medical to anyone other than the council members. And lastly, we also have one last table, and we can zoom in a little bit and zoom out if that helps. So when we look at cost of medical benefits, healthcare benefits, so currently Arroyo Grande If you're an elected official and you have no dependents on your insurance, the value of that is $709.97. If you cover one additional family member, it's $1,333.63. And if you cover yourself and two dependents, it's $1,717.21 per month. You can see that, like we mentioned, all the other cities other than Grover Beach offer these benefits to their elected officials. We have varying amounts of costs for these health benefits throughout the cities. And you can see that as we go through there. And I'll zoom out this chart so people can see the whole chart. So with that, staff presents our analysis and really is here to answer any questions. I can't thank Kelly Wetmore enough for writing the staff report. She did a great job of finding out all the information, and we present it to you to give us some guidance on what you wish.
Thank you very much. So let's see if council has questions. I'll start to my left. Councilmember Stewart, do you have any questions?
Just one quick question, and it's probably going to be for Kelly.
Excellent.
Since she has probably the most tenure of anybody in the room as far as being with the city. I was curious from your perspective if you found that there was a value of all the people that you've dealt with over the years of applying for running for office, if there's a sense of some value to the compensation, if that was a reason why somebody would or would not run. It's kind of just your anecdotal experience more than anything factual that you'd have numbers on. But I was just curious from your perspective.
No, from my perspective as the elections official, that's not an issue that has come up during the nomination process. I mean, we do publish in our packet what the monthly compensation is, and that I'm not sure how detailed we get about the health insurance, but it's not something I've had active discussions about with candidates. It hasn't really come up.
Okay.
I think it's just a benefit.
All right. Thank you. That's all I had.
Mayor Pro Tem?
I just have one. Kelly, I apologize for not asking you this ahead of time. In 2008, when was it, what was it before that?
So in 2008, it went from $330 a month mm-hmm. to the $405. And that was, that increase was because in 2008, AB 1234, which is the ethics law, went into effect in 2006, which imposed training requirements and reimbursement. So the council, we weren't able to give reimbursements, like a not reimbursements, but like a allowance. So the law became that you had to reimburse for actual expenses for travel and mileage, for example. So the $75 expense allowance that the council had been given previously was taken away. So they added that to the monthly salary at that time. Because the stipend hadn't been updated, I think, since, I mean, the chart, can you put that chart up again? The chart, it hadn't been increased since 1997. It went from 300 to 330 at that point. So there's the history.
Oh, right there,
yeah,
thank you.
The history is kind of right there. So that $75 difference was to compensate for the loss of the allowance.
So it just switched over to, it was the same. It just wasn't, it was the same.
Right. They were receiving the same.
Right.
It was just packaged a different way.
Okay. And then I asked you a question earlier about the, so for the council members that take the insurance has gone up so much. Now some of the stipend for the council members that take insurance, we have to contribute that towards the insurance each month. And do you know what that is?
Unfortunately, I just don't have that information for you.
Okay.
But someone, Shannon? We tried. Okay. All right.
So I may be able to answer that. Can you rephrase that again?
So if you take the insurance...
So that's the city's contribution.
Right. So the city only contributes so much to the insurance. So the council members take the insurance. The stipend check becomes smaller because we contribute towards part of the insurance. And so I can go back and look at my direct deposit.
Yeah.
What'd you say, Keith?
Yeah, that,
no, it was the employee share.
Oh, yes.
Is what
the
you're
employee
asking.
Share.
Yeah.
Right. I can.
Yeah, more of an HR question.
Sorry.
When you were preparing the staff report, I just have a quick question for Kelly. The 1717 that you have listed for family, was that the total cost? Because what I'm seeing, I have numbers for family, medical, what the city pays for the medical portion.
That's the city's contribution.
That's the city's contribution.
Yes. That I only did the city's contribution.
Okay.
And that's throughout the chart.
Okay. So, yeah, we didn't bring the information in terms of how much the council members are contributing. But
okay. So, basically, we're paying this much, but
right.
the insurance really costs this.
Right, right.
And every year that gap
right.
seems to get bigger. So
right.
you're paying more and more of your own share for the health benefits.
And right, and I'm going to go back. I'm going to actually look in my – I'll see if I can look. I think it's $100 about that we contribute because the insurance – at one point, the insurance came back down, and I think the stipend got – you know, it had a little more room. Then the insurance got more expensive, and the stipend got a lot smaller.
And that would depend on whether you're taking one or a plus one or plus family.
Exactly. Right. So I'll try to answer my own questions because I'm going to look at my direct deposit.
Okay. And I will check and see if I can
– Okay, thank you. Those are my only questions right now.
Thank you. So just wave at me if you're ready to come back up.
Okay.
I know also because there's different plans too,
yeah.
so it would depend on those
right.
amounts are varied. But yeah,
right.
you're talking about like the employee portion and your portion.
Right.
I gotcha.
The cost sharing, yeah. Okay.
Is your only question?
Yep.
Okay. Councilmember Paulding, any questions?
Just two questions. And the first is a point of clarification on page 2 of the staff report. And you mentioned this, Jim. It says a change in council member compensation cannot be applied during the council member's term of office. That's clear. And can only become effective whenever one or more members begin a new term of office. So come the November 2020 election and there's a new council member, does that mean that it would apply, should this council head in that direction, to all the members or just that member?
To all the members.
All the members.
To all the members. Okay. The second question relates to attachment 1. I'm just curious as to how we arrive at the contribution number that you spoke to earlier, Kelly.
So, again, that's probably an HR question, but it would okay. probably be because it's based on our employee
right.
groups. Shannon?
Yeah, so what we offer to the council members is what we would offer to any non-safety employees.
Okay.
So that's how the number is calculated. It's based on the MOU, and it's recalculated based on the rates every year.
Okay. Thank you. Those are all my questions.
Councilmember George, any questions?
Yes, thank you. Do you know in the past 11 years if we've had any other times where the council has discussed compensation?
I'm not aware of any times that wasn't listed on here with actions on compensation.
I can answer a piece of that. There was discussion, and I don't remember if it was official or not, but there was discussion at the dais when I was council member previously, so not 2016, but previous. And we had discussion as to, Kelly, maybe you and I can knock this out, as to whether there could be some sort of compensation or reimbursement for those council members who did not take insurance.
Oh, that's right. I remember that.
So that was a conversation yeah. that we had as a council, and I believe, mm-hmm. this is the part I'm really fuzzy, I believe that's not legal, is what we came up with.
I don't remember that.
You're remembering that, Kristen?
I remember that. I think I was on Planning Commission at the time, and I probably from watching the meeting, I remember it because some council members didn't take the insurance, and they got insurance elsewhere, so they were wondering if they could have the exchange of the money for not taking the insurance. And I just remember it was a flat-out no, but I don't remember why.
Yeah, I can't remember why either.
Yeah.
Something in my head is telling me it was a legal thing. But because I think what the issue was, now that I'm thinking that through, at the time, the idea is, for example, I don't take the health insurance. So I make $405 a month, and other council members might, so they're getting a different level of compensation. So the discussion at the dais
right.
was each council member is even being compensated differently. And I believe now I'm thinking about it, the answer was if we had a buyback or some sort of in lieu, then that would have to be offered citywide. and that wasn't something that we could do citywide, and I don't remember the reasoning why we couldn't do that. But
there was never a formal public hearing to adjust compensation since 2008. Okay. Thank you for that. Do we have any idea what the percentage of our cost of insurance that's gone up? Does it go up every year a certain percentage? Like, are we looking at an increase of 1, 2, 3, 5% every year on our share of insurance?
Our being all employees, right?
All employees.
So it doesn't go up a
non-safety employees
percentage every year, per se. So we get the rates from PERS. Mm-hmm. I know this year, because we have more than one plan, some of the plans went up and some went down. So it really depends on what plan you're on. Mm-hmm. But as the actual, the percentage, I wouldn't have that on me right now. I could get that information.
But has it slowly, in the past 11 years, has it slowly been increasing, or has it pretty much stayed stagnant?
I would say yes.
I might even disagree a little bit with slowly. I think everyone has seen health insurance costs rise rapidly, and there's many factors, not only just in general, but then, you know, we're kind of a special county where it's not really easy to get a lot of health care providers and insurance companies. And things like you're talking about having people cash out, we generally discourage that because we want to have as many people in the plan that's going to help us get the best rates from the health care agencies, too. So,
thank you. So when I'm looking at the maximum contribution the city can contribute right now, we're looking at $1,700. Is that the highest plan? I'm just trying to get to the bottom line as far as the maximum amount that we would be contributing to health care for one council member.
I believe so, yes.
So $1,700 is the maximum.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Last question. Do we have a list of committees and what the other committees also pay out as well? For full disclosure, if I'm a new candidate considering running for office and I come to the city, here's all the potential ways to get compensated.
Yeah, so we have Air Pollution Control District. That pays $100 per meeting. The California Joint Powers Insurance Authority is $100 per meeting, and you have to drive down to L.A. for that
one. And it's once a year.
And it's once a year. Integrated Waste Management Authority is $100 per meeting. The San Luis Obispo Council of Governments Regional Transit Authority is $100 per meeting. And we have the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, which is $100 per meeting. And it should be pointed out that these roles are split for people, so it's not as if one person is going to be the representative and bring in $500 for all that service on those boards.
Okay. Thank you very much. Those were my questions.
Thank you. So I see you.
Well, I just found. Or did you already go?
No, but go ahead.
Okay,
I'm used to it now.
I found the answer to my question. So my paycheck for the month is $270 because I take the insurance plus two. So it must be that the insurance has gone up for the plan that's plus two. Must be whatever $1,700 plus $130 because I don't get the $405. Then there's some taxes because I don't know what the 405. I was just trying to determine what the cost share is. I think that was it. Go ahead.
Okay. So I want to make sure that this is crystal clear for the public. So the question isn't whether one person at the dais, their seat changes. In terms of when this would become, if this was something we voted to do, that this would become official, which would be December 2020, it's not that the person's seat needs to change, it's that the term of office needs to change, correct?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And can you go back to that timeline one, please? So would it be fair to say that there has not been a nominal increase to the council since 1997, because, and this was even a surprise to me as I saw this timeline, I had no idea it went back that far. So in 1997, so 22 years ago, it went to $330 per month plus the 75. So it was structured like that. So it's been 405 since 1997. Mm-hmm. So when we put in the other chart, scrolling down.
So it's been,
yeah,
it's been 330 since 1970.
But then with the monthly.
With the 75, okay, the council total compensation, mm-hmm, in terms of salary.
That's right.
At 330 plus 75, it's really, really hasn't changed since 1997. Can you scroll down to that, the one that has the chart with, it's table one, that one right there? So where it says last increase is 2008, that's just really kind of misleading, even though even compared to the rest, it's still challenging that in my mind that number should say 1997, because that's the last actual increase, although technically the 75 was coming in a different way. So I just wanted to point that out for people at home and for people who aren't reading the staff report as closely, maybe to note that 2008 number is kind of should have an asterisk next to it, because it really wasn't an increase in compensation in 2008. So there's that, and that's it. My other question was answered. So if there are no follow-up questions, then let's go ahead and open this up to public comment. So if you would like to come and comment on this issue, please come on up.
Hello. My name is Sandra Bokikyo. I am a registered nurse here in town, and my husband is a physician. And this is the first time I attend a meeting. I am here because I am angry at the lack of common sense from each and every one of you. How dare you even think about giving yourselves a raise when we are in a financial hole? You have done research and presented evidence about other city's officials' compensations, but this is like little Johnny going to his parents, "Mommy, mommy, mommy, I want this toy. All my friends have it. It is not fair that I don't have it." Just because Johnny has that toy doesn't mean that you have to have it. You also have said that we are not talking about getting this raise now, but how irresponsible of you to plan and commit to money you do not have and you don't even know that you will have in the future. You already get a lot of nice perks paid for by the citizens of Arroyo Grande, such as health insurance. I pay $1,500 every single month and $6,000 in deductibles before my health insurance can pay for anything, okay? Your spouses get cash in exchange for health insurance from their employers because of your insurance paid for by us, the taxpayers. You also get car allowances, gasoline reimbursements, tax deductible entertainment, to name a few of the nice perks. You also say that financial deficit is due to the previous administration. But just because the previous administration was irresponsible with our money, the taxpayers, doesn't mean that you also have to do the same. Allow me to please remind you that under Mayor Ferrara, we always had a balanced budget. Translation, we lived within our means. Can you please let us know which programs you will cut? Will it be the father-daughter dance or Christmas lights? Or how much of our tax increase will we have? Let me remind you that many of our citizens live on very tight budgets, and the quote-unquote small tax increase to pay for your raise is less food for their families and no gas for their cars. Mayor Karen Ray and members of the council, have you got no shame?
Thank you. Would anyone else like to come forward?
Good evening. Good evening. Heather Jensen, a citizen of Arroyo Grande. And this has been a topic that I've kind of followed for several years and have talked to Jim Bergman, city manager, several months ago, and council persons in regard to this. And it's not so much the stipend that is a bug under my saddle, but it's the health insurance, which I think is a huge chunk of our city budget. And not only, I just don't think it's equitable, for one thing, for not a benefit that all five council people are able to take a benefit of. If, in fact, it's something that seems to be a sacred cow that was implemented back a ways, not always, but it has been implemented and it seems to be the accepted practice at this time, that I just think it needs to be revisited and not have it be a benefit that's taken for granted by newly elected or continually elected officials. Looking at it, it's about $2,000 for at least three of you, and I think that is a huge cut into our budget, which could be spent otherwise. The other thing is the stipend is one thing. I know there's gas reimbursement and some meetings, and you know, I think that's modest, but I don't think it's fair that combining both of them, the insurance, the health insurance, and that, I think they should all be the same. And whether the health insurance would not cover totally everybody's premium, maybe it would be, I don't know, $1,500 each, $2,000 each. Our city would still be better off if everyone got a similar compensation. And then I'm hearing that maybe it's not legal. Well, I think that legal-wise, there could be some manipulation in the wording that if the whole thing is a stipend, and you could spend it however you want. But I think it should be equal to each one of you council people. And another question I had that Mr. Bergman just brought up about the reimbursement for certain regional offices. So in addition to the $405 stipend that you get, say the $100 benefit toward integrated waste management or whatever, is that in addition then to the $405 for those serving on those boards?
We'll answer questions at the
okay.
end.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Would anyone else like to come forward?
Good evening, Council Members. Colleen Kubel. I'd just like to say a couple of things about the compensation that you're requesting. We're in such a hole, as each one of you know, and we, the taxpayers, are going to have to foot the bill to take care of that hole one way or another. Taxes, whatever, bonds for the Briscoe Interchange, those types of things. So at this time, I believe that when you are doing your jobs, and it is hard work doing what you're doing, but you have to take care of the people that voted you in first before you get that. And so I believe this is just the wrong time for this raise to happen. We need to take care of our fiscal budget before anything like that happens. And the citizens in Arroyo Grande, everyone that I've talked to, state the same thing. They don't mind a raise when there is money to do it, when you have taken care of the budget, not overspent or done whatever is happening to put us in the hole. There are many different reasons why. We all know that. But this is the wrong time to do this, and it needs to be shown from every one of you that you feel that for the citizens in Arroyo Grande, take care of the problems first, and then nobody will have a problem with you getting the raise that you deserve, because you do. You're working hard. But do it at the right time. This is not the right time. Thank you.
Thank you. Please don't. Thank you very much. We want to make sure that everyone feels welcome at the dais. Thank you.
Good evening, Patty Welsh. I'd like to start by saying Ms. Jensen made some very good points, and that we have to figure out some way to make some equality between benefits and what each council member makes. It's been skewed for quite some time. I'm retired. I get a Social Security check. I get a retirement check. I'll tell you what, my cost of living adjustment is nowhere close to 60%. That is what I find repugnant about what you're asking. You're not asking for 5%. You're asking for 60% plus the mayor to get more. I know that you guys work hard, but I doubt you work 32 to 40 hours every week, week in and week out, to get some of the benefits. And you're actually asking for a retro raise. You're asking for money from past councils because You didn't work back then, but you want the benefit of them not asking for the 5% every year. I think at this time, 60% is just too much to ask for. I think you've just gone a little too far with that. You know, you're looking at hitting us with tax hikes and everything else. We've got a fire department we can't afford. We've got a Briscoe interchange we can't afford. Do things within your means. We've got our crews down to a skeleton crew. Our staff has done amazing trying to keep the city running. I just say cut the amount back. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to come speak?
Patricia Price, Aurora Grande. You guys work really hard. I know you do. I come to almost every meeting, and you've done your homework. I really appreciate the hard work that you do. The idea of spending more money that we aren't already spending is just appalling to me. I was here when we cut city staff, we cut city employees. It was painful, the cuts that we made to help the budget. I know that there are some reasons that we really... You can't do anything about, like, the PERS obligation. We've got other things coming up that are going to be really expensive. The Five Cities Fire Authority is costing us a lot. It's going to cost us more unless we do something to curb those costs. I agree with the previous speakers. Now is not the time to give yourselves a raise. You do deserve it. And I'd be the first to applaud it when we get our budget straightened out, when we don't have such shortfalls coming up. Thanks.
Thank you.
Council, Mayor, my name is Mike Dries. I live at 543 Via Bandolero. I've been here for 30 years, and when I look at the chart, you guys are underpaid compared to other places in town. Other cities in town. I don't know why it's got so out of proportion, but to me, you're out of paid, and we have the best council of all the cities. So the trouble that I have, I'd love to say, hey, give them their money. They deserve it. I really believe you guys deserve it. The trouble is, we do have that big deficit, and my heart says, hold on to it. Don't do it now. For the whole city, don't do it now. It's just not the right time. Okay? The second thing is, I think if you should, that one lady said, you should look at the total package. I don't like the idea that some people get the insurance, some people don't get the insurance. I think you should have one compensation. If your husband has insurance, you don't need it. That's up to the individual family. Nothing to do with the city. For your work, you should get the same compensation. The mayor probably should get more. I think the mayor does more. Okay, but I wish you could get the money. I don't know if 60% is enough or what. I'm not even weighing on that. I just think you deserve the money, but you should maybe have to wait till the city gets fixed. I hope I live that long. Thank you.
We do too.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. I'm looking at the figures, and it looks to me like we're talking $1,500 a month for all five of you if you raise it about 60% total for all five of you. That's what it looks like we're talking about. I know that 60% since 1987 or whatever the number is, which is, you know, 33 years about, that you haven't had a raise. However, I do know also that the health care has gone up more than 60% in those years. And so the health care is always the biggest expense. But it's been that long. It's a shame we can't pay employees or council people based upon how much money we're saving for the city and how you can renegotiate contracts and make savings for the city. That would be really great to have perks for that. But saying all this, I wouldn't have your job for anything. And I wouldn't work for that amount of money. So I thank you very much.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak? You sure? Okay, then I'll close public comment and bring that back to council. We did have one question, City Manager Bergman, and the question had to do with whether other meetings were paid, and I'm slightly unclear, but I hope you wrote down that question.
Yeah, I think the question was, well, basically these extra money, the $100 for these others, like Air Pollution Control District, that comes out of their budget and has nothing to do. It's completely independent with what the compensation through the city is.
Thank you very much. All right. Well, then being democratic here, I'll start to my right and see if Councilmember George would like to start with some comments.
Sure. Thank you. So it's really awkward to have to ask to compensate what you're worth. And it's even more awkward when we're put in a situation where we have to make that decision as well. That being said, this wasn't an item that I was prepared to discuss at this time. We have, just being on since January, we've had a lot of really huge items come before us, and we have some really tough decisions to make, and we're asking a lot of the public. So bringing this forward right now is difficult for me to process, but I'm doing my due diligence. I'm going to process it as best I can, and hopefully at the end of this meeting come to some clarification in my head, because it is quite complicated. So I'm just going to start with my notes, because you know I always type my notes down and I read them, because it's that way I don't forget anything. I think that it's brave of this council to have this conversation. I don't think necessarily this time to have it may have been the best choice for us, but I think it's really brave of us to have this, to fight for future councils, not even for our council right now, but just for this position. No one's talked about it in 11 years. And so that says something. When we look at social media, when we're talking to the public, there is, for lack of a better word, we have a lot of support, but there's also a lot of disdain for the people who sit up here. And we're your neighbors, and we're your friends, and we're your family. We're not so removed that we don't have feelings or we're not connected with you in any way. And I feel like when we sit up here and when people read this, the first thing that we get is all the negative. And that's hard. That's a hard pill to swallow. I'm kind of used to it. It doesn't really bother me, but it's still a hard pill to swallow with the amount of time we put in to doing what we do. And I'm going to take a long time in what I'm going to say, because I just feel like I there's a lot I have to say. So I received an email the other day, and I met a city volunteer over at James Way Preserve, and we went on an hour-long hike. And this gentleman has taken the time to help our city develop trails. I don't know if any of you have hiked that preserve, but it's beautiful, and he's done an amazing job, and he puts in a lot of time. And so the least that I could do was to take that hike with him so that he could share with me his vision. And I say that not because I'm doing anything special, but I feel like that's my job. Then that's what I'm here for, is to hear what you have to say and to work for you. I think that every council member that comes up here, they have a different role. They have a different agenda. They have a different way of running, working their position. My position is to work really hard for you, to read all the packets, to go to all the meetings, the council meetings, the committee meetings, the staff meetings. There are so many meetings that we go to, so many acronyms that we have to learn. That in itself should allow us a separate stipend. But we do this because we enjoy it. And to be clear, none of us have asked for a 60% raise. What we asked for was, hey, let's take a look at how the council has been compensated, and let's have a discussion. And what came back was a staff report. And in that staff report, that is what staff recommended. So to be clear, none of us up here are saying we demand a 60% raise and we're going to vote this in for ourselves. I just want to put that out there just to try to clear up some misconceptions that I've heard and the emails that I've gotten from people. Do I think that it's fair that our stipend hasn't been increased in 11 years? I don't think that's fair. I think anyone who does anything for that long of a time, your stipend or your salary or should increase a little bit. I mean, just a little bit, more than nothing. And since 1997 until now, for it to be exactly the same says a lot about the value of the people that are sitting up here or the lack of it. Do I think that it's fair for us to increase the pay scale 60% and do it all in one fell swoop? No, I don't think that's fair either. Do I think that it's fair to consider a small, reasonable increase? I do think that that's fair, and I do think that moving forward for future councils, we need to consider their worth and the amount of time that they put into it. Yes, it's a volunteer job, and yes, the stipend isn't to cover our hourly rate. It's to cover our expenses and our time because it's an opportunity cost. When I am working avidly for this city, that means I'm not putting that time into my business. And that's okay. That's what I chose to do, and I'm happy with that. Do I think that anything that we decide tonight should happen now? No. We do have a lot of items that we're working towards. I've been asking for the strategic plan to come back because there's a lot I want to get out into the community. So right now is not the time for me, personally, to be supporting this. However, I think we should look into it for 2022. So any decision that the council makes tonight, if we're looking at 2022, that means all these council members' terms will have been completed. And the next time that you vote, you will know exactly what you're voting into so that you can feel like you have a say. I don't have all the answers. I'm hoping tonight we can sort through some of it. Those are just my comments and my thoughts. I want you to know that we value your trust, and we work hard to earn it, and we work hard every single day for you, whether you see it or not. And I just hope that when you leave this meeting and you go back and you talk to your friends and you talk to the people in this community, that you understand that we're not trying to be unreasonable. We're just trying to make sure that what we're doing is equitable. And those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Paulding?
Thanks. I want to first thank everybody for being here. It's always great to have a half full or almost full room, and it certainly always influences, I think, how we think when we know that the community cares. And especially I want to thank those that submitted letters and emails and things beforehand. If I can for 1 second, though, shift gears to the budget and talk about where we're at in terms of the financial status of our city and the health of our city. And with a couple of questions just to our city manager, would you mind explaining where our budget is in relation to surrounding agencies and how, in some cases, although we have large financial obligations, like the costs associated with the Briscoe Interchange project, those costs are common for jurisdictions to the extent that they're debt financed, for example. Do you mind just providing a little bit of an overview? Because I think there's a feeling that we're bankrupt right now, and that's not the case. Everything we're doing is to plan for our future and make sure that we have the money to fund the services that we provide.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, it is. It is disheartening when I hear things of bankruptcy or deficits. Because it's frankly not true. What we did at the beginning of the last budget was we did what everyone should do, is you should look out 10 years and you should try to figure out what costs are going to go up and is your revenue going to go up and down. And we made a bunch of assumptions and we looked and we said, look, if we continue on this route right now, we're going to have to dip into reserves every year. And that's not a prudent thing to do. So the council looked at their budget and gave me direction on how to balance that budget. And we did that through many different ways. One, we went back to every department, and if there was any discretionary funds, we looked at them very closely and made sure that everything that we're spending money on is a priority. Secondly, we looked at our fees that we charge for certain services that not everyone gets. Someone's coming to the door to get a service. We wanted to make sure that we are recouping what our cost is. And we can't recoup more than that. We can't make a profit. It's very clear in the state law. So we adjusted some of those fees. Another thing we did was we looked at our pension obligation. CalPERS has costs that are going up, and we know that. And what your council did was you took money from our reserves, and you paid down that unfunded liability. And that's a courageous thing to do, because in the end run, it's saving hundreds of thousands of dollars. I can't remember. It's been a while since I looked at it, but it may be into millions of dollars over the terms of these unfunded liabilities. And it got our pension obligations down more than they were. And quite frankly, when I talked about our pension obligations of the 585-plus cities in California, Arroyo Grande was 14th best for their pension obligations. That's an amazing thing. Then that still wasn't enough to close that gap. And we did end up talking with some employees who are ready to retire and eliminated some positions. We also did the hard work of looking at staff members and saying, certain staff members will not have a job on July 1st. And that put us to where we are today with a balanced budget and a budget that has reserves that meet the requirements that this council puts on it. So that if there is a downturn, which we plan for, and I think everyone is planning for, it just hasn't arrived yet, and we don't know how bad it's going to be, but we're prepared for that. When we look at things, the word about the deficit is, yes, right now we know how much money comes in every year, and this council has prioritized what we're going to spend that money on. As staff, I feel it's my obligation to tell you, hey, we're balanced, but there's still a lot of things that we own that we know that we've been deferring maintenance on. Doesn't mean we're going to go bankrupt. But what it's saying, I believe, to taxpayers is you could either pay for it now and do the maintenance, find a way that we get more revenue so that we pay for the maintenance, or you can wait until it's all crumbling, and then it's going to be much more expensive. So the idea is, if we're looking at what is the most efficient and effective way to pay for everything that we do in the city with the taxpayers' money, the argument I'm making about $3 or $4 million extra a year would make it so that we're paying the least amount of money as a community to take care of these assets. And I appreciate the opportunity to be able to tell people that, because our budget is complex. It's a lot of stuff that we do, and it's difficult to get that information out to people. But every day staff is looking at ways to save money. No one's in this organization wasting money. And so thank you, sir, for the teeing that up so that I could say my piece.
Thank you, sir, for the explanation. That was exactly what I was looking for. I think it's really important that we just all acknowledge that there's been a lot of work that the city's done, and it hasn't just been this council. It's been prior councils to get us where we are. And we do have a balanced budget, even though there are costs that that are on their way that we're going to have to figure out how to pay for. When looking at this particular issue closely, obviously, if you compare our city and our council member pay to surrounding jurisdictions, it's on the low side. But I do agree with members of the public today in sharing that it's not the right time, that we have these costs that we have to figure out how we're going to address. And I agree with the rationale that Councilmember George shared about maybe looking into the future would be a better time. But at this point in time, I think that even though this job does require about 20 hours a week on average. That's what I've seen. Sometimes it's less, sometimes it's more. And it really is public service. None of us are up here because we want to make money. We're here because we want to serve the public. And there probably are good arguments for why, especially younger people, could be more attracted to run for office if there was a little bit more incentive so they could actually pay the bills and serve. I won't go down the list of arguments that probably could be made, but I think, as many have stated today, that it's a timing issue, it's a budget issue, and so I will not be voting for any increases today.
Councilmember Storton.
Thank you. I really do appreciate the comments of my colleagues, and I would sincerely like to say that when I ran for this office, it was never the intent of a windfall of money or insurance to help support me. I'm a very fortunate person who was able to retire. And if you look at the pictures on the walls over there, those are past people that have served in these chambers, and most of them are older white guys. And I say that because there were people who had time in their lives to take of themselves to serve this community, which is very appreciative. Having the benefit of providing some sort of stipend really is an incentive for some people who would be financially challenged, would not be able to serve. And, you know, I don't want to call out anybody in particular, but I look at somebody like Councilmember Paulding, who is a young man who has an opportunity to be flexible with his schedule based on some circumstances, but you don't get to attract a lot of young people like that who are willing to serve their community because they're not at a point in their life where they have the financial means to do it. And so I know he struggles. I mean, he doesn't share that with me personally, but I think that's something I observe from the outside. But I appreciate his brain and ability to come here and provide articulate arguments for providing a benefit to our community. I appreciate the passion that Councilmember George has provided. We all care, and we're up here first because we want to serve the community. Just a couple of comments before I tell you my reveal, if that's what we want to call it. When we throw around the number 60%, we're talking 60% of $400. We're not talking 60% of $80,000. There's a big difference there. So sometimes we use numbers that make it look much more evil than it is. It's really not that big of a percentage compared to what is being paid out. But when you use that number alone, just in that context, I don't think that's a fair number to use. Some people have come up and made comments about you're already going to hit us with taxes as if we're immune to any of those taxes that would be brought before our city. We are all in this together. I ran for office so we could all be in this together. We have some serious decisions to make, but it's all for the sustainability of the community that we all love. We may have different plans and visions to get there, but when people come up and send emails that are disparaging or tell us that we should be ashamed of ourselves because we care so much about our community, I do take offense to that. And I hope that there's an understanding that I have never worked with a finer group of people, and I've been on a lot of committees, and these people are committed to serving this community. And whether if we said tonight, you know what, we're going to take it all away, they would gladly finish their terms with no question. But the question is, what do we do to attract people at a different time and a different space? And I agree with that philosophy is, yes, I think we do need to look at this and decide that there is value to this. I want to encourage other people to run besides just older retired people. I appreciate the mayor who works a full-time job and acts as mayor and does an excellent job serving this community in a capacity that I don't know how some people find the time. When I was working my full-time job, I never gave this a consideration. I appreciate the people that have and do, and we have a history of that. So my thought is, yes, I would like to visit this at another time. I don't want to visit it right now. I particularly would throw out the date of 2022. That's when I'm done with my service to this council. It wouldn't impact me, but maybe it would encourage somebody else to run. One thing we haven't... I won't mention that now. I just do want to encourage other people to run and provide service to the community. So my thoughts are I would entertain a discussion about something in 2022. Other than that, I have no interest in pursuing any of this right now.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you for that. There was a speaker that brought up I was trying to write quickly, gas reimbursement, other perks, gas reimbursement, and a tax-deductible entertainment expenses or something like that. And I just wanted to, if I got that correct, just reiterate that we get the stipend and we get the insurance offered if we would like it. We don't get any gas reimbursement or any other business deductions at all. Go ahead, Jim.
Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, I thought, no, go.
There's no car allowance.
Oh,
no
that,
one gets
that
a car
was the other
allowance.
Thing. No car
If
allowance.
You do take your personal car
right.
to an event, like, far away,
right.
You
out
can
town.
Reimburse the IRS mileage.
Right.
But that is not a standard thing.
But the meetings in the county, the city that we meet with the on our committees and citizens, there's no reimbursement. So I've been up here for 6 years. Before this, I was on the Planning Commission for 8 years and the Architects Review Committee for 1 year. The Architects Review Committee and the Planning Commission absolutely loved those jobs. Those are all volunteer. I would argue that the Planning Commission is close to the amount of work that I put in on City Council. Sometimes it's even more intense because you do meet with a lot of citizens out at the site, so you do drive around the city a lot. There was no pay for either of those. I'd do those again in a heartbeat. I loved that time serving the community and really having an impact on what our community develops like or doesn't develop like. So as has been mentioned, no one up here, and I think no one before us, is in it for the money. That's absolutely not a consideration. I would say that in 22 years, I would imagine that gas and car maintenance and childcare has gone up substantially. And for someone to come on after me that's a single mom that maybe works at Starbucks and maybe she has another part-time job, and she has two young children, and she wants to be able to serve, but she possibly doesn't have a husband that can watch her children, she's going to have to get childcare, and that's pretty expensive. So basically, she can't serve because she can't afford to serve, because the money that we are providing as a stipend does not cover what her expenses would be. So we're asking her to pay to serve on the council, because having to pay child care is very expensive. And it's not just, I mean, you see us up here every couple of weeks, but understand we have the other meetings we go to that we report out on. But besides that, we spend hours and hours meeting with people at their place of business, at a project, at a coffee shop to talk about different things. And I will meet with anyone, anytime, ever. If they reach out to me, I will meet with them. It doesn't, sometimes it's an hour and a half. It depends on how much they want to say. So I think that, not for me, I would, because I would do this for free, because I did do it for free when I was on the Planning Commission, I think that to provide a little bit of help to anyone who wants to serve is very important, so that we can get a wide swath of citizens that want to serve up here that represent all of AG. Like Councilmember Storton said, we don't just want the retired people that can afford to do it, or the people that have spouses that make a good amount of money. We want the single mom that absolutely believes that she has something to bring up here, and she represents a good portion of that community. And right now, she wouldn't be able to do it. And so I think that that's really important for across-the-board representation for the city of AG. We're not going to get that unless we do something. I also think whenever we do this, we should have some sort of a automatic COLA, if you will, cost of living increase, just built in, so that we don't have this huge gap. Nope, Heather's saying no. Okay, so the amount that we can go up every year?
Yeah, it's all set forth by statute under state law.
Okay.
And you can't have some kind of automatic adjustment.
Okay, so it just whenever anyone brings it up. I mean, whenever a council member raises it, we can put it on the agenda, and then we have the public hearing. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's an ordinance. Okay. Required by ordinance.
Were you going to say something, Jim?
So another thing is, it could be direction to the city manager that, look, every 5 years, every 3 years. That way it doesn't, whichever council asks is going to get some comments, right? So if it becomes, no, having some sort of compensation for council members is an important policy stand for the city. Mm-hmm. Here, we want to give at least some direction to the city manager, whoever that may be in 3 years, to do this work. So just to add on to it.
Yeah, actually, the city manager and I were talking about that earlier today. Perhaps it could be tied to the budget. So when you have the budget come up, maybe every 4 years, 5 years, you also look at adjusting your compensation. So you aren't ever facing this recouping back 20-plus years' worth of the 5%. Instead, you'd be kind of gradually doing it as you go, or at least considering it, and then you don't always have to do it. But that it could be on some kind of just natural recurring rotation where it's considered.
Okay. And also, I've worked with about 3 city managers. I think Jim is my 4th city manager, not Jim, but before Jim, the last 3 city managers have all expressed interest after we'd have discussed. The council had discussed benefits and pay and COLAs for the bargaining groups with the city. Each one of those city managers has always said, you know, gosh, we really have to get your salary brought up. We really have to. But you can see we haven't done that because it's awkward to sit up here and say we demand, you know, this much money. Because none of us and none of the councils prior to us are doing it for the money. We're doing it because we want to serve the public. So it's never a good time. It's not a good time now. It's awkward. But I really feel if we want broad representation of all people in the city, we need to do something about it. But I will go with the will of the council when that time is. Thank you.
I think at this point the will of the council is quite clear, but I wanted to add a few things in here because I will just say that I'm supremely disappointed. I've been doing this longer than anybody else sitting here in terms of sitting at this dais, and there is never a good time, ever. We're government. We will never have the point at which the public says, yep, everything's good now, let's spend some extra. There's no such thing. And if we kick this can down the road to 2022, then what we're doing is we're making it even harder for the next council to sit down and say, wow, now we're looking at a 66% raise or whatever that nominal number is going to be to try and get that into parity, which means that this council at least had the courage to have the discussion tonight. And quite frankly, I think we're chickening out and we're kicking that can down the road where to make it even harder for the next council to make that same decision. Because no matter when you have this conversation, it doesn't matter if it's tonight, it doesn't matter if it's budget time, it doesn't matter if it's at election time, we're going to get the same comments, we're going to have the same attacks online, we're going to have the same philosophical disagreement over whether this is a volunteer position. And it's not going to change anything. And so that's really frustrating to me because the reason that it hasn't been done since 1997 isn't because the council up here just always said, nah, no, I'm not in it for the money. It's because it's politically untenable to do it. It's impossible to do it. And when I stepped up to mayor this time around, I can't tell you how many people came to me and said, oh, are you going to quit your job now? I mean, now that you're mayor? Like, and I said, you know, the answer obviously is no, but and when I tell them, you know, that nobody could live on $400 a month. This isn't a full-time job. I mean, you and I know that, and especially everybody sitting in the audience knows that's not what this job is. But given the amount of time that we all put in, where I'm really glad that Councilmember Paulding can get this done in 20 hours a week, that is that's a nice average for him, and that's not always the case. And maybe that's why the mayor's salary is different. But it hasn't been done because there just isn't ever a good time. And it takes, I was hopeful when Councilmember George said that it's brave to fight for future councils, except for I'm hearing the council say, but we're not going to do that. We're going to kick that fight down later, and we're going to go ahead and go through all the attacks, and all of the fear and all of the us taking the brunt of hatred for politicians all the way up to the national level because somehow we're greedy and it's all, you know, a bunch of finger pointing towards us. And that's just not what's going on here. So I guess it's not about considering my worth. My run at this is who knows when, but I'm not on the front end of my career. I'm on the back end of my career. I am fighting for future councils. I'm fighting for the next group. And if we're going to totally say that we are for districted elections, and the state of California and the city of Aurora Grande and this council very recently has said, yes, we're going to move towards that. We want broader representation, but we only want to make it so that retired rich people can do this job. That, I can't wrap my head around that. And to paint people up here as though we're greedy and that we're taking something or taking advantage of anyone, it's very difficult for me to sit here and say, you know what, you're right, I'm going to say no, I'm going to cave. Because from my point of view, I'm fighting not for me, and I'm not fighting for these people, because I may not even get whatever this is, and I'm certainly not going to if the will of the council is to kick it down another 3 years. But I'm fighting for that next person. I want Aurora Grande represented by all the people in Aurora Grande. And the fact that I'm only the second elected female mayor, and I'm a mom, and I have a job, I want that kind of diversity. It doesn't have to be a mom. It doesn't have to be somebody who's working. But I want the diversity here so that we can make sure we have the best decision-making possible. What do I hear out there? I know that when we do something this controversial, the emails that we get are the equivalent of people screaming at us. And I knew that was what we were going to be looking at when I brought this forward. But what I also hear out there is for every one of those, I hear 100 people say, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that job. I wouldn't do that job, and I certainly wouldn't do that for $400 a month. And it's not people being disrespectful. It's quite the opposite. It's people saying, wow, you're amazing. But that's what the majority of people out there feel. I am 100% sure of that. And I would just like to see that we value not only though that majority of people, but the people who would be coming down here next. And if we're going to wait, I offer this one last thing. I'm sure that everybody sitting up here are about the most fiscally responsible people I have ever worked with. I am fiscally responsible. I don't carry a penny of credit card debt. I live within my means. I think I've done pretty well for a teacher, considering what I've been able to do with the money that I have over the course of my career. But I'm pretty sure that in the next 15 years, I'm probably going to have to replace my roof. And I don't have a monthly set aside getting ready for paying for that. I challenge any person here, I'll bet you don't either. And the people who are sitting here, and the people who are sitting here in the audience, are the people who care deeply about fiscal management. And I can pretty much guarantee that nobody in the real world does that. So when we're talking about fiscal problems here, and when Councilmember Paulding asked the city manager to talk about the budget, and he laid out the issue about what's coming forward and potentially asking for sales tax, that's what he's talking about. We have a balanced budget. We have finally a structurally balanced budget. So this council is providing the highest level of budget responsibility that has come in the 15 years that I've been in public service. And the reason that we're asking or potentially looking at other things is when you hear that next, I want you to be listening and hearing for that roof savings, because that's what he's talking about. It's not talking about we can't pay our bills. We can pay our bills. The most fiscally responsible thing for us to do is to pay them at the lowest cost possible, and that requires a level of savings that municipalities typically don't do. Just like you and I typically don't have a set-aside for our roof, we don't have a set-aside for our next car, which we know is going to come. We don't have those set-asides, and our city manager is asking to set this city up so that we do have those set-asides. It's a level of fiscal responsibility that, again, municipalities typically don't have. So when we say, no, not until we have this dire thing done, that's just not where we're at. So the will of the council is clear. I think my disappointment is clear. And so I will leave it at that. So if anyone has a motion they'd like to make, please do. But otherwise, I think there you have it.
I thought that was very compelling. Thank you. No, absolutely. I mean, and that's another reason why we have these discussions, is that we have somebody like this who can articulately state the facts and provide us with a means to understand things to a greater extent than maybe I feel like even myself should have stated. I get up here and I get emotional about it, because there were some attacks and some emails that are like, wow, really? You know, this isn't what this is about. It's not what people sign up for. And you know, these are people that don't know me personally but are making judgments about me. So I guess I do take it a little personally. But when I hear our mayor talking like this, we do have things that we have to take care of. And when I hear the city manager talk about that plan and process, it's like we have a vision in place that's going to put us on a successful path. It's not going to be easy, but how many cities take that time to have that vision? A lot of cities don't have that capability. We're lucky we can even have this conversation. I do have a roof fund, just to let you know.
Of course you do.
But it's going to take me much longer to get that money before the roof is due to be put on. So, but no, it's just planning for stuff like that. I'm compelled by the mayor's statements. Originally, I told myself I wanted to wait until 2022 just because I felt like I'm off council. That absolves me of any attachment to it. People can, if I even choose to run again, people could vote for me or not for that decision. But I didn't get up here to get reelected. I got up here to serve the community now, where everything falls else into place later. That is yet to be determined. I thank you for the compelling talk and the education. I'm willing to say I have no idea what figure we would be looking at. It's something I think we need to have a little bit more discussion about, and I'd be willing to entertain that now. But I think the concept of providing an opportunity for people who don't have the opportunity is really meaningful, and it's important to bring those people in, because those are the voices that are not being heard. We're lucky we have the diversity of the dais we have right now. You don't see that in a lot of communities. And because of that diversity, we're making some really good decisions. I think we need more of that diversity. So I'm just throwing that out there now, and maybe we can talk out some details.
Thank you for that. I think I talked too much. I want to listen some more.
So I'm going to talk just because I guess I like to talk. There isn't much opportunity for us to discuss our stipend, our compensation. We've had a couple people from the public talk about equity among all council members. Just to be clear, in my comments when I said 2022 isn't to not make a decision today and wait until 2022, but I don't want anything to come into place until 2022, because that really would give all of us a very unbiased decision-making process, for lack of a better word. So when we talk about healthcare, I know that that's a stickler for a lot of people, and that is a huge portion of the cost of what council is paid if each council member were to actually accept all the benefits that were offered. We have to assume that when we go into any new year and the council members come up, we have to assume that it's a possibility that each council member will take all the benefits. And that then is a much larger cost to the city than what currently, because there are council members who don't take insurance right now. So is there room for discussion, since we have this public form right now. Is there room for discussion, for negotiation? What are the council? What does the council have to work with as far as addressing some of the public's concern as far as equitable pay?
Heather, if I can try and see if I can state that a different way. One of the members of the public suggested that maybe that it would reflect it in salary rather than in benefits so that it was more equitable across the board. I see an obvious issue with that, but I think that's what you're asking, is being able to balance that out a different way.
I just want to make sure that when we have this discussion, since we're having it and we're all here, let's have the discussion. Let's talk about all the options. Let's make sure we understand what all of our options are, and the public understands that we've done everything we can do to go through all of our options before we end this and have to wait until, you know, 11 more years when another council decides to talk about it.
And I think I could help with a quick summary. So there, like I said, this is a statutory framework that we're subject to under state law. And there's kind of two components. So the one component is the salary compensation. And that's the one that's built on this. You can get 5% each year since the last time you had an increase. So we're locked into that up in that we could do up to the 60%. We could opt to do less if you wanted, but that's pretty much the boundaries for that. There isn't any flexibility in there. Then the second component is the insurance piece, and the way it reads under the government code for that is that the city can offer, separate and apart from the salary piece, insurance on the same terms that it's offered to its employees. So that's pretty solid pretty clear as well. There is, of course, anyone is always able to waive or forgo either the salary or the benefits. But those are kind of the parameters as far as how each of those is set.
Okay, thank you for that. So with that being said, like I said in my comments earlier, I would be for a small, modest increase that wouldn't take effect until 2022. What that modest increase is, again, that's, you know, I'd like to put that to the will of the council, but that's the only thing at this point that I would be in favor of supporting, just because with the cost of health insurance, the potential cost to the city, again, because we have to assume that everyone will take the insurance, the potential cost of the city is already looking at, $2,200 a month per council member, and that's a big number in my book. So I would be open to a small percentage increase that would start in 2022 based on the 405 base salary.
So if it started in 2022, then it would already be 3 years behind, because we can't do anything going forward for the future.
Right. So whatever the council, you know, whatever we can work out, if we can work out a percentage that we're comfortable with, then I would be in support of it, as opposed to saying no and having this item die. So that's my offer, or my something that I would be comfortable with.
So if we waited till 2022. And we made a decision tonight, this council, in 2022, it would just happen. Would there be another public hearing? Would there be anything else that they had to do, that council? Or because then they'll have to, you know, we're kind of redoing it again. Are we going to redo it? Are they going to redo it again?
No. So in order to implement any increase in the compensation, you have to adopt an ordinance and go through that process. So you have the first reading, the second reading, and then the ordinance is effective 30 days later. But within the language of the ordinance, you could say that the increase will not be implemented until. And we all know it can't be before 2020 anyways, mm-hmm. But you could certainly make it 2022 if that was your desire. And then, no, nothing would have to happen come 2022. The ordinance would just finally take effect at that point.
And then the issue that we spoke about earlier building this into the budget every so many years. We could work on that tonight as well. Can that be part of the...
Well, you could give direction to the city manager that you want to have this conversation whenever.
I would just clarify that even if it was part of the budget discussions, that it would require another ordinance to be adopted. I mean, you could budget for that assumption, but it would still require council action to adopt another ordinance increasing it to 5% for the next cycle. So every increase has to be adopted by ordinance.
Right, I understand that. I'm just trying to avoid, say, in 2020, 2022, however we do it, if we do it, that it's not another 22 years because it's awkward. We're here having this nice, awkward conversation, so much fun, but I'm trying to avoid them having to, I can see it happening again. So something maybe built in would be something I would be in favor of, depending, you know, how often that is, I don't know.
I'd like to make a plea for 2020. There's potentially 3 new people sitting here in less than a year. And that's full turnover, potentially. And that's an entire voting block of people. 3 votes is a voting block. So in terms of waiting to 2020 to avoid some sort of perceived conflict of interest, a majority of the council is up for election in any year, really. And so I don't see it compelling to say to wait to 2022 except for to absolve an individual's, I guess, frame of mind or decision-making process. But in terms of the functionality of why we're doing this, when we're doing this, you know, again, is it better to do this in May as you're coming into election time? Is it better to do this at election time? Is it better to do this at the holidays? No matter when we do it, it's going to be a bad time. There's no good time to have this conversation. If you have this conversation, what you're doing is you're going to go stand in the town square and you're going to let the whole community throw rocks at you and yell and scream at you, which is okay, because that's what this job is. But it's not going to be any different any other time that we have the conversation. So, you know, again, I'm making the plea that the new council, who even if that's some form of this group, I don't know, that's the voters will get to decide and make their decision based on and evaluate us based on a decision we're making now. And what's going to happen if we kick that down the road to 2022 is that's going to be out there and people are going to be upset that that's taking effect, and then a future council or a future person running is now going to have to deal with a decision that was made 3 years ago, because that's the way that works. And so if we're going to make this decision, we need to take the lumps. We need to stand in the square, and we need to get the rocks thrown at us, and we need to make that decision and have the courage to do that. And then when we stand up for election, we need to say, yeah, I did that, and let the community decide.
And I have no problem with that. I'll stand in the town square all day. You guys can throw rocks at me all day. I don't have a problem with that. I do believe that waiting until 2022, for me, is the right decision. So I'll stand by that. If we want to do 2020 and that's the will of the council, I support that. But this has nothing to do with absolving me of any guilt. This is me saying that this is the best decision for me looking forward and this council moving it to 20. I'm not kicking it down the curb because we're going to make a decision today. Or a possible decision today. But what I'm saying is I don't think it should take effect until 2022. So that's, and I'll just stay with that.
And I'll just throw out there too, I mean, my original intent was, I think if I, not that I had an original intent, but just thinking through it, because I certainly enjoy listening to what the public has to say and council members. I thought the 2022 would be a good compromise. It's far enough away for us to make some serious decisions about things that are coming up involving the city. But I did personally feel like it was a great separation for my term of office. There will be 2 of us here that will expire our term of office at that time. And for some reason, I just feel like that separation of the complete council is more palatable. Personally, I really don't care. I too, you know, aside from when I need to read my agenda report, I won't be sitting in the town square taking on rocks because it's hard to read and have take on rocks at the same time. But I agree. I think 2022 is a reasonable date, and I think we can come up with a reasonable compensation figure that would help reflect that point in time. Because originally I wasn't really seriously considering it at all. But given your arguments about appreciating the need to bring in other people and really what the value of that is, I think there's room there to still get something accomplished, relieve the burden from future councils, but still coming up with a decision today. And I think that matters too. What is that compensation look like in 2020, and what does it look like in 2022?
What about 2021? I know. I'm just trying to meet everyone in the middle.
Also, it jives well with kind of this voting districting that we will be looking at.
Well, so that brings up a good point. So the districting, if that all is agreed upon and that's the way we go, that will happen for the election of 2022. Okay, but the decision, if we were to move forward tonight, those people that are running in those districts would know that compensation is going to be different. I'm just trying to make sure we get representation from all the districts, and so I want to make sure they know that there would be a higher stipend to encourage people to run. I'm afraid we might not get people from some districts, so it's concerning. But they would know that coming in if we went that way, correct?
And it's hard because we don't know. We don't know what the demographer is going to do. We haven't even had a public discussion about it yet. So it's hard to know, but at least we would cover some of our bases. If for some reason we do redistrict and the way that it's districted out makes it difficult for that district to run, then additional compensation is justified. So.
I'm just going to say and basically echo Councilmember Storton's comments that it's a pleasure serving with you all, and especially you, our mayor, and I really, in looking at this and the table, there's a compelling argument to be made, and you've made it, but that the mayor position is definitely undercompensated. I wish that the community at large was here in this room to make that decision. Because I know that, like you said, a majority of the public would probably want to see that. It's just that given the increased costs and budget circumstances we're in, I can't at this time support any increases.
Well, then for the purposes of moving this meeting forward, if someone would like to make a motion, then perhaps now is a good time to do that. But otherwise, if we are not going to have one, then we should move on to item 11A.
So I would... I would direct staff to proceed with preparing and bringing forth an ordinance modifying the monthly salary for council members in amount up to $648 per month, with the change in salary to become effective in December 2020 after the next general municipal election. And then I would also add the additional mayor salary of $150 a month to take place at the same December of 2020. Also noting for the record that the pay has not been increased in 22 years.
Can I just get clarification because you read up to six? Do you want to have a specific
That's
amount
the,
or do
six, you want 648. To 648?
And Kristen, excuse me, Councilmember Barnage, Mayor Pro Tem, you said December 2020 or 2022?
2020.
Okay. I will second. Is there discussion?
For discussion, is there any wiggle room to decide on a compensation amount for 2022?
Are you saying instead of or in addition to? Because Heather's making faces, so.
Well, I guess for discussion purposes, I'm trying to discuss through the motion. The motion was for 2020.
I guess I would argue the point, or I would make the the point that I certainly might not be here. Three of the council members might not be here. We're having this difficult conversation. We have a public hearing. We're putting it out there. We're taking the heat. I'm happy to do that for future councils and other people that would like to serve. And I think kicking it down the road another 3 years is just really counterproductive. We look at what cost of living is and how the costs have gone up, and it just seems like this is fair.
I feel like this is our chance to kind of seize the moment. If we make no decision at all, we're just going to revert back to exactly where we are, and that will kick the can down the road. I feel like with the 2022 possibility, we're waiting a little bit longer, but we're still accomplishing the same objective and appeasing several of the members that are up here. Still accomplishing something.
There is a point at which, though, we need to value ourselves and not future councils. And so my last ditch effort to ask you to go along with the motion is, in looking at that, we're resting our discussion on standing up for the future, which we all absolutely are. But this council has been undervalued for a very, very long time, and you are undervalued, and you are undervalued, and you are undervalued, and you are undervalued. And I want to stand up for whomever is coming the next time around. And the public can decide if that was my good decision or not, if I choose to run next fall. And two of you will be running next fall. I mean, well, two of the seats will be running next fall. And I don't see particular value in putting off this decision. It's in real dollars. We're not discussing anything about the insurance benefits. We're discussing a nominal amount of money that in the very shortest of terms is fair.
In fear of losing this totally, because I don't want to lose this totally, because then I feel like that's the problem. Much of my thinking with many of our issues that we're facing as a council is preparing ourselves for the future. And it's exactly what we're trying to do with our roads and our sewer system and our water delivery and everything else. That
and your roof, apparently.
And my roof, but that's a personal thing I'm taking care of. So in that line of thinking, I feel good with the arguments that have been presented. I appreciate the conversation with my colleagues, but I don't want to stall where we are right now. I want to be able to set that foundation to be successful, and if I have to go from 2020, go to 2020, I would make that move just because I don't want to stall this. I don't want to come back here and have this conversation again. I want to take care of it now. Well, I want it to be successful for other people that are willing to take this position, because I do appreciate the people that step up to do it.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Okay, we have a motion on the floor. Can we get a roll call, please?
Mayor Pro Tem Barnidge?
Yes.
Mayor Ray Russom?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
No.
Councilmember Storton?
Yes.
And Councilmember George?
No.
That takes us then to item 11A. Would anyone like a break?
Sure.
Okay. We'll take a quick 5-minute break. Thank you.
You should walk on Corporate Canyon Road and watch the holes in my road, by the way. Fix the roads. Shame on you.
Okay. Sorry.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Yes.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
I know nothing about the next item, so don't. How are you?
I'll feel that one.
Thanks for being here, Chief.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, are we ready to go back on?
Very passionate.
Okay, everyone, welcome back from our short break. We are now a little bit out of order because we changed that order at the beginning of the meeting to accommodate the people in the audience. So we are now, having finished item 11B, we're going to item 11A. This is consideration of an introduction of an ordinance prohibiting sale and distribution of e-cigarettes and vaping products, .. So I guess, are you doing the staff report? It says Woodham here?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I am. Good evening, Mayor and members of the Council. At the October 22nd City Council meeting, you all directed us to come back with two ordinances tonight, one to prohibit the retail sale of electronic cigarettes, including online sales, and a second prohibiting the possession of tobacco products by persons under 21. Both those ordinances are before you this evening, ready for introduction, should you choose to do so. The first ordinance prohibits the retail sale of electronic cigarettes and is modeled after the San Francisco ordinance in that it prohibits the retail sale of electronic cigarettes, including electronic cigarette liquids and paraphernalia, until they are approved by the Food and Drug Administration. It includes retail sales from storefront locations located in the city and internet sales into the city. The second ordinance prohibits the possession of tobacco products by individuals under 21, and it is modeled after the former Penal Code Section 308B, which was repealed by the state in 2016. So this is modeled after that in that it contains the same penalty provision, which is a fine of $75 or 30 hours of community service, as was contained in former 308B. As we discussed at the last meeting, this is just a tool for our police department. It doesn't mean that every person they encounter will be cited. There are other education and other methods they have in dealing with people under 21 that are in possession of tobacco products, but it would be a tool available to them should they feel the need to use it. And we're available to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much for that cogent and concise staff report. Well, let's see if council has any questions.
I just have a few quick ones. So the ordinance, if it were to take effect, would there would be a six-month period before it takes effect. Is that correct?
On the prohibition on the retail sale of electronic cigarettes, okay. That's correct. It's modeled after the San Francisco. It's to give retailers an opportunity to go through their inventory and a heads up to make that transition easier on them.
And the possession would take effect immediately?
Well, as soon as it can. Any generally, unless it's an urgency ordinance, all ordinances require first reading, second reading, and then are effective 30 days later. Okay. So it would follow that normal ordinance process.
And do we, I know it's not an ordinance thing, but do we have something in place to share with the public that there's a new ordinance? Like, how will people really understand that? I mean, we know that there's a new ordinance, but how will the general public know that there's a new ordinance that, you know, you can't vape?
That would require some form of outreach. We could certainly post something on our website, and the chief may have some ideas on outreach to those people most affected.
Sure. Yeah, thank you. Good evening, Mayor and members of council. So we do have a plan in place to start messaging this as soon as possible. Obviously, social media that was discussed, but also we'll be also delivering letters to include the language and all that kind of stuff to the retailers as well.
Thank you very much. And my last question is, will we be working with the schools at all so that they're going to notify the children and let the kids know that there's a new ordinance as well?
Absolutely. So I've been in contact and have meetings with the superintendent, also high school staff, my school resource officer, who's in direct contact with the principals as well.
Wonderful. Thank you, Chief. That's my only question.
Thank you. No questions? Yeah. Okay.
Chief Pryor, what can you just, for the benefit of the public, if this ordinance were to go through as proposed, what would happen to the high school students if they're caught with the vaping products?
So currently there's an administrative process that's conducted from the school administrators. That entails contact with the parents immediately. They seize the items. And then they have some other ways that they deal with the student. What this would do for us would allow us another tool that, you know, we don't plan to utilize it typically on every single contact. I mean, we would use discretion. And probably the first time offenders probably are not going to get a citation. Unless maybe they're caught dealing and they have large quantities on campus, they would, even if they're a first-timer, they would get a citation most likely. And then the habitual offenders, they would be eligible probably also for a citation. But it's definitely a discretionary tool. And my school resource officer and I have had a lot of conversations about this. And we don't believe that it would be useful to be just citing every single minor that's in possession on campus for the first time.
Okay, and then as far as the citations, if they get a citation, they can either pay a fine or they can do community service. Is that correct? It's one or the other?
Yes, that's
okay.
Correct.
So then if they do either one of those, community service or a fine, does it still go on their record? Because we had an email that I'll talk about in a second from someone. Is this exactly the same as, say, a speeding ticket? Or not?
So it's a misdemeanor, and okay. A speeding ticket would be an infraction. Okay. They're both citations.
Mm-hmm.
They both go through the court process. So to answer your question, will this go on like their criminal record?
Right.
I don't believe it's going to go on their criminal record, but do you know, Heather, if that's the case?
Generally, misdemeanors do go on criminal records, so yes.
And I don't know about this, so I might be asking a dumb question.
I want to correct myself.
Okay.
I'm talking about 18 and older.
That's the question
for
I had.
For juveniles,
yes.
I do not know exactly how it goes on their record, but I'm not sure how it's treated when you are a juvenile and convicted
right.
of something, whether that record is treated the same as when you're an adult and you have something on your record, because a juvenile will not go through the regular superior court system mm-hmm. as mm-hmm. somebody over 18 would. They go through a juvenile court,
mm-hmm.
and they're represented by someone from the probation department. It's a whole different process. And
it's on a record, but it's not accessible.
So I don't know how juvenile records are handled now.
Okay, so Keith, Councilmember Storton?
It's on a record, but it's not a public record that's accessible. Only okay. under certain situations the court can be petitioned to reveal information,
okay.
but then it would have to be overseen by a judge.
And that's
that.
Under 18
yes.
for that. Okay, which leads me to my next question. We received a letter from Mr. Castro of the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, and I actually spoke with him this afternoon. He sent a letter because that group is not in favor of the part of the ordinance that tickets the students at the high school. And he says that they do not want to see the criminalization by minors as a result of tobacco products. Too often we see how minors' future college or other plans are derailed as a result of these laws. So in theory, I get what he's speaking about is we have big tobacco to blame for this increase. And so he's saying these kids that are young and their brains aren't developed might make bad decisions, and we don't want this to to be on the record forever. So I asked him about what he meant here, because my kids just applied for college and there was no, did they get tickets? And so I want to be quite certain that if we're giving tickets at the high school, it's really not derailing their future college plans. And so it just kind of stuck out. He didn't have an answer to that. He didn't really answer my question, so I didn't get any extra information on that, but it makes me feel a little bit better. First of all, knowing that this won't be used as every single person might get a ticket, I think that this will give you a tool in your toolbox, and it will discourage people, hey, I might get a ticket, I better not maybe bring this. And I think the use will go down. I think that we'll see that. But also hearing from Councilmember Storton that if it's a juvenile, it's on a record that's not necessarily accessible, because everyone, we all did, made mistakes when we were younger. Let's see.
Can I piggyback that
yes.
one really quick?
Yes.
We would, though, still see those, the people aged 18 to 21 falling
yes.
in that citation yes. category, where they'd be cited as adults and prosecuted accordingly, right?
As a misdemeanor.
As a misdemeanor, okay.
But that's not the kind of thing that would show up on a... I mean, colleges don't pull background checks. I mean, I'm a little confused, but I asked clarifying questions of the same gentleman and
right.
didn't get a response. So.
Right. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing something. And when his letter brought that up, I tried to go through every scenario of you know, on a college application. And it's really... it would be a background check for law enforcement or maybe fire. But it wouldn't be just out there for, you know, everyone to, I don't think it's going to, that particular instance is not going to necessarily ruin futures if they're at the high school and they're under 18.
Well, yeah, and if I could just add.
Yes, absolutely.
As a chief of police, and, you know, we do extensive backgrounds just like fire.
Right.
And if that was to come up, I mean, I would be honest, I would chalk that up as life experience.
Yeah.
And they're not going to not get a job because they got a citation for vaping on campus when they were 17 and now they're 21 and
right.
there's been nothing in between and they want right. to be a police officer.
Right. Right. And thank you for that. Let's see my other question. Hang on here. Focus on the... So as far as, would you have any objection to if we move forward tonight with this ordinance? I'm particularly curious how it will work at the high school and what the numbers will come in like a year from now or 6 months from now, if it's we've really shown a decrease in the amount of offenses. So would we be able to do something a year from now as sort of a look back and not any, would that be okay? Would that be something that you guys could put together a year from now?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'd be able to okay. collect those stats and bring them back to you.
Okay. And then my other question about the 6 month, I get it with the styrofoam because restaurants can have big, you know, back stock, but vaping products, it seems like the places that are carrying these vaping products are, well, I don't know. Does Walmart carry this? Because I'm just thinking that 6 months is a really long time to have them use their stock. It seems like a lot of these places that carry it, their stock would run out in a week. So I guess I'm just asking that. It's a rhetorical question, maybe. Okay, those are my questions for now.
Thank you. Councilmember Storton?
I just had a question about the online portion that we had discussed last time. I didn't give it much thought last time because it came up kind of as a new nuanced piece to this. But I was curious from the chief of police perspective, how would this be used or enforced? Or I kind of envision, at first I was thinking some major retailer was trying to reach people online and sell. But if you had communication between two people online through a social media account or something like that, would that fall under, you know, trying to sell these products under that scenario? I'm just trying to think, are there other scenarios online besides a mega company or something trying to do outreach to sell products as opposed to two or three people communicating with each other online trying to sell product?
Wow, that's a great question. You know, and this is also new that I didn't think about that piece.
I just thought of it right now, so sorry I didn't.
No, that's okay. Heather, have you put any thought into that question?
I don't know if I fully understand the question. The way it would work now is that anyone retailing, selling
an electronic cigarette into someone who lives in the city, I think it would apply to. They would not be allowed to sell to right. someone within the city.
How about two individuals communicating online within the city trying to set up a cell that wasn't actually facilitated with a physical product?
So someone in the city
or outside the city, someone using online social media, some type of electronic communication, I want to sell something to you, so I use that form of communication. But I don't actually make a transaction with you, but I try to sell it to you, and that gets discovered through an officer.
Oh, you mean attempted sale of an electronic cigarette?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, if somebody is trying to outreach, let me read this again. So the sale has to be completed, and for anyone to be in violation, does
yes.
a sale? Okay. Mm-hmm. An attempt doesn't matter. It couldn't be a 664. It couldn't be an attempt to sell.
In English, por favor.
Yeah, now you're in kind of the penal code. Yeah, like there's a theft and an attempted theft.
Right. Is it still a crime as you're doing an investigation for somebody trying to sell?
I'm sorry. I guess I'd have to throw it to the chief whether he would think he could prosecute an attempted sale that isn't completed.
But let's say it's not an attempt, but there is actually facilitation with online discussions. I guess that would be part of the...
Well, you can discuss. Yeah.
Are you
right.
throwing in there that it's a minor, too?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I mean,
to make it even more complicated. I guess I'm probably making it more complicated than it is. I'm just saying, as long as you've captured the act, there's the violation. The communication online doesn't matter. How that was facilitated, whether it was in person or online, it doesn't matter. The fact that it happened. I was just trying to look through this online segment a little more, and I'm trying to think of what does that look like to you? How is that enforced? Are we just putting in language that is bold and sounds good, but is it practical?
That's a really good question. And to be honest, I don't know how exactly we enforce the online piece. We haven't gotten into the weeds of that yet. And I've had discussions with some of the other council members about this, trying to figure out how does this work. If it's a retailer from out of state, how do we hold them accountable and those kind of things? So work to be done there still, mm-hmm. in my opinion, as far as how do we prosecute. I don't have those answers yet today.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
That was a tough one.
Yeah.
Because I get what you're saying, but I don't know where the line is. I think that's what you're trying to get to, is where's the line of...
Yeah, and I think having not experienced it yet, and still there's, you know, it still would have to go through a court process to be determined.
So to kind of, I guess this isn't really a question, but further teasing that out a little bit, in my mind, there's very little that we can do about the situation that you discussed, but Amazon is not going to deliver to 93420 anymore, because that's just the way their business model works. And there will be others that have that same thing. The larger retailers will do that. And it's the smaller transactions that I think you're talking about that are a little bit more problematic. For me, I'm good enough with taking the stand and knowing that everything I can do within the realm that I have influence over, I've done. And that so are there holes in the ordinance? I think, you know, Councilmember Storton's poking that, and I think there are in the true ability to get to 100% no. I don't think that's possible, but at the same time, I wonder if you know, kind of like the good faith effort will at least stem some of it. I think that's likely to happen. What I didn't ask on this, Heather, and I should have asked before tonight, and it didn't occur to me till just now, because I know you're working so hard on this. Morro Bay is a little ahead of us on this. Did you talk to Morro Bay about how they were affecting that piece of the online ordinance?
I did not talk with them about it. I did look at the, they're, I believe, tonight having a same discussion. I did look at what they are looking at enacting tonight. It's much broader. I have a list if you want to know. They're addressing other issues as well, but I did not speak with them about how they would plan on enforcing their ordinance.
Out of curiosity, can you, since you have that prepared?
Yeah.
I wish I had had the time and forethought to have looked at theirs before the meeting tonight, and I didn't do that.
So they're proposing for consideration banning electronic cigarettes, banning all flavored tobacco, including menthol, and banning smoking in multi-unit residences, so apartments and condos, in your unit and in the common area. They also are considering a tobacco retailer license program, which we have in place, but they don't, and prohibiting the sale of tobacco products by retail establishments that contain a pharmacy, and prohibiting the sale of single cigars that cost less than $5. So they seem to be targeting low-end cigars, prohibiting their sale, but allowing higher-end cigar sales.
Huh.
They must be healthier, I guess.
I think it said something about youth are more likely to purchase a cheap cigar.
Oh.
Karen, can I ask you a question about the Amazon thing? So
how
do we go about that? We call Amazon and say, hey, we don't allow this anymore.
I don't know the answer to that, but I can tell you. How do I do this without making myself sound like a jerk? I live in a farmhouse that's 130 years old, so varmints get in there sometimes. And sometimes I'm looking for things that can help with those varmints. And I can tell you that the things that really help with varmints
can't get
delivered and it goes by zip code. So yeah. That's how I know that, and that's the way Mayor Heading also explained it to me. I don't know what notification goes to them, but I know that they do that nationwide. I know that they do those things. I don't know the mechanism, but I know it's there.
Okay.
Well, and if we learned that a retailer was online selling into the city, we would initially send like a cease and desist letter. Mm-hmm. So you let them know this is illegal here, you can't be doing this. And that would, and then if they stop, that's the end of it. Mm-hmm. You would only have to go beyond that if they ignored your letter and continued to sell here.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, was that the end of that? This is my turn, isn't it? I'm getting lost. I'm sorry.
This is your questions.
Yeah, my questions. Okay, so I had the same question about outreach excuse me, to retailers, so thank you to Councilmember George for that. And I think that's the last of my questions. Let's just make sure. Yes, that is the last of my questions. So if there are no follow-ups, I'd like to go ahead and open it up to public comment. Being waved off quickly, I'll close public comment and bring it back to the council. So I went that way and that way. So Councilmember Storton, you want to start?
Yeah, I'll start. I actually, in reviewing this again at our last meeting and going through the documentation now, this online portion really is kind of conflicting to me because I just want to completely understand how enforceable and how much work is it going to take for, you know, staff if there's even that much work. But one of the things that Councilmember Paulding brought up last time was kind of the rights of adults making choices and having availability to a product that they may want. And, you know, how much do we control of alcohol use and bad driving and all the other ills that we get into? And I think it's worthy of, I'd be curious to hear what the rest of this council thinks, because I think it's worthy of discussion. Although I'm not a fan of the product and want to keep it out of kids' hands, I also realize there's a balance there of ultimately controlling everybody's behavior from making bad choices or saving them from themselves, and the issue of personal responsibility. So I just want to, I appreciated what he said last time and just want to talk about it a little bit more since we're here and on the subject.
Any other comments?
No, that's it for now. I'd just like to hear what you guys think.
Me? Okay. So in support of what staff has before us, I do have some reservations, like Councilmember Storton said and Councilmember Paulding, because I do appreciate that there are adults that are over 21, that live in Arroyo Grande, that might want to purchase this. And same thing, how much do we try to control them? I understand trying to keep it out of the kids' hands, so I'm sort of torn on that. I would like a look back in a year, whoever decides to, if there's a motion, I think that's important to show that this is doing what it was intended to do. Like I said before, I don't want to just create ordinances to make us all feel good. I want to really make sure that this is targeting the vaping and the incredible uptick in vaping at the high school. Those stats were just so alarming that it's once a day. And so I want to make sure, and I think that's good to share that with the public later on, that what we're doing is hopefully going to change that. The 6 month, you know, here you go. The FDA hasn't approved all this stuff, but for 6 months, we're going to keep pumping it out of our stores. I just don't think there's 6 months worth of retail products at these stores in Arroyo Grande. I just don't think it's there. I think they're probably ordering it every couple of weeks to refill their stock. So if we're really serious about trying to keep this out of the hands of youth, I think that a wind-down time of 6 months is too generous. Those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilor Paulding.
I agree with all aspects of the ordinance except for the online ban, as discussed. I think just adding to that, we really, in seeking the best fit policy solution, want to look at the harms we're trying to address. Obviously that this is an epidemic, and it's incumbent upon local government to protect the health and safety of its people. And I think the possession and use aspect, as well as the local retailer sale ban aspect, accomplishes that goal while balancing the rights of those over 21 to purchase these products online and have them delivered to their home to use them in the privacy of their home. And so I would just recommend, if possible, that the council seek that balanced solution, that would be the best fit policy solution, in my opinion, and what I would stand for.
Okay. Councilmember George?
I would concur with my fellow council members. I think the most important aspect of this ordinance for me is the ability for us to really take back control of our high school, for lack of a better word. The numbers that were presented at the last meeting were just shocking, and seeing that the incidence of vaping at the school is increasing 100% year over year over year, and the two young women that came to speak at the last meeting just really saying that they can't even avoid it. They can't go to the bathroom. They can't avoid it, and we need to take care of those children. So I'm definitely in support of this ordinance. I would also be in support of banning it from local retailers, but still allowing it online. Thank you.
I had not considered, thank you very much, I had not considered the wind-down period as a point of discussion, so I want to revisit that in just a second. But in terms of the online, here's the way I'm seeing it. You're making very good arguments in terms of making that balance between the right of someone to access something that is legal for them to access and the wish to make sure that... I'm going to back up. Don't forget that the statistic is that it is illegal for anyone under the age of 21 to buy this, and 50% of the users are under 21. So I still hope that my concern is, as Chief Pryor was talking about, and as was relayed to us at the mayor's meeting, when you find a kid with a trunk full of vaping products that is selling them on campus, they're not buying those from our local retailers. That's the one I want to stop. That's the one that's getting delivered here to 93420. And I think that's really important. And when you're buying online, there's no way to discriminate what the age is. Mm-hmm. And so I'm concerned about that because, again... You know, there's no age verification. So you just need your credit card number and that's that. And you have to self-report what your age is. They don't check IDs. And so I'm concerned about that. And even if it's, I don't know if futile is the right word, but it's not entirely enforceable. I still think it's part of a robust policy of trying to make sure that kids don't get their hands on this. And where they're likely to get their hands on it is at school. And where they're likely to get exposed to it is at school. And I guess I'd like to see us still consider keeping that in there for that reason. Is it going to stop everything? No. Are adults going to find a way to get that delivered to them and know how to work the system and make that happen as kind of as Councilmember Stewart was talking about? Yeah, that's probably going to happen. I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about the kid with the trunk full that I need to stop or do whatever I can to do that. So additionally, on the wind down period, in my mind, we were just kind of molding after San Francisco's ordinance, and I get the 6-month wind down, but I hadn't really thought about until you said it the applicability to a small town like this. We don't have giant retailers mm-hmm. that have lots and lots of stock. We don't have the Juul headquarters in San Francisco. So I do find your argument, Councilor Barnidge, compelling in that we're saying this is not okay, especially without FDA approval, right. And yet we didn't hear from one retailer. Did anyone hear from one retailer? I was surprised that I didn't. I only received 3 pieces of correspondence since last time, and all 3 of them were mad at me for not doing more. So I chalk that up as a win for this council. I think that's good. The biggest thing was they wanted to see us go further, more like Morro Bay's, and start pulling in flavored cigarettes as well. And my response on those was what I said that day, which is I am squarely, you know, looking at youth usage, and the youth usage just isn't flavored tobacco products. There was a little bit of issue that I got in one of those emails about it was what Councilmember Barnidge talked about from the perspective of somehow with the penal code and affecting college, and I didn't quite get there and ask clarifying questions and didn't get a response. So I guess that was a long way around to a wind down period. I'd be open to making that shorter. Our ordinance would potentially take effect 30 days after the second reading, correct? So second reading would be end of November, and that would take effect end of December, correct? If it followed that track?
I don't have a calendar in front of me, so I'm trying to think. So yeah, if we introduced it tonight, brought it back at the second meeting in November, it would take 30 days after that.
Okay,
so it would be like towards the end of December.
So would you...
And I would be comfortable reducing the 6 months. I think it would be legally defensible if we went... I wouldn't want to make it too short because at some point that's creating a hardship and a potential problem. But I think there is some flexibility in there.
Could we go to 60 days?
I was thinking 4 months. Oof. Maybe 3. Anything less than 3, maybe it starts to get a little...
I was going to say 60 days because I think that's a lot. I think they're going to be ordering more. I think they're going to run out, order more.
I was at was just we haven't heard from the retailers. We didn't get any pushback. But when we, you know, when you talk about the styrofoam ban, we heard from restaurants. We heard from people who use those products.
Can I ask a question that relates specifically to that?
Absolutely.
What is the notice? And maybe this was covered and I checked out, but what noticing do we do specifically to retailers that this change has come into effect?
Well, that's what the police chief was talking about is, yes, we will need to reach out to them and let them know that if this is adopted, that it's adopted and when it's going to take effect and what it entails so that they're aware of it.
Could we send that noticing out before it takes effect? So in theory, if we said 60...
Once it's adopted, we could let them know that it's been adopted and here's when it will take effect.
And so
I wouldn't want to do anything before it was adopted, you know, other than alerting them that this could be coming, but then it wouldn't be, you know, a done deal.
So at the second reading, we could say that it takes effect in 30 days, but 60 days for enforcement.
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to also take a moment to read, got some correspondence, which you all, I'm sure, got from Assemblyman Cunningham just this week. It was just regular old mail that we get. And it's called A Look Back and a Look Ahead at the California Legislature. Anyway, it had some statistics about teen vaping in here. And what is cited in here says teen vaping has increased 50% among middle school students and 80% among high school students since 2018. So that's a little bit that's coming from the state level and since 2018. So those numbers are even going up even faster than was shown to us earlier. So I appreciated that being shared with us and that landing in my mailbox right before we were going to hear it. So I guess there's still discussion to be had about the online thing. So maybe Councilmember Storton, you wanted to hear from everyone. What are you thinking?
Well, I was curious when you mentioned you were concerned about the kid with the trunk full at the school. And I'm not sure why our ordinance couldn't be enforced as is without the online portion.
It's more the access that if he's got it in the trunk and he got caught that time, but that's the guy who's getting it to others, that's reducing his ability to get that to others was where my mind was. Not that I'm separating the penal part of it from just the access part of it.
Right. Yeah, I think I'm still just kind of returning back to that one personal responsibility and the overwhelming government intrusion on somebody, an adult, having the ability to make a personal choice, even if we disagree with how they may choose to do whatever they do.
Okay.
I just would like to interject on that point, too. When we're talking about the person with the trunk full of products, I mean, to assume that he got them or she got them online, I think, is maybe not the safest of assumptions. I think a lot of these products end up coming from people that are dealing other drugs and things. And so there's a big black market thing, I'm sure, that's occurring locally. And so in addition, I just want to remind our council of the statistics that the Tobacco Health Division of Slo County Public Health gave to me over on a phone call, which was that they had some study that showed that kids are more willing to try to buy the products over the counter than buy them online for fear that the package would get intercepted by their parents. And so if that is statistically true, that provides yet another reason why it may be the case that the vast majority of these products are being obtained black market illegal, or because, as we also heard, enforcement isn't taking place to the extent that we would hope due to our limited resources. And 10 to 15% of our local retailers are continuing to sell, and in some cases receiving fines 4 to 5 times, where the first fine is, I think, maybe a warning, and the second one's $1,000, then it ratchets up to $1,000, and then they have to, refrain from selling any tobacco products for a 15-day period, and then another $1,000 fine. It's a cost of business. And so, again, not only do we need to increase our enforcement, I was going to make that note to the extent that's possible. I know it's not part of this ordinance, but as much as this council can, make that a priority, if that needs to be a stated priority of this process, I would really just encourage that we do that. And Tobacco Health had indicated they have a full staff of 5 people, and they're willing to assist in doing those decoy sting operations and so forth. The final aspect of that is just the, in addition to the uncertainty that, or the, what's the word I'm looking for? The problems that we've addressed regarding the online portion, we have to remind ourselves of the enforcement and that may be problematic and can potentially overburden law enforcement with resources we don't have in order to do the enforcement. So just wanted to interject that final point. And since I'm making comments now, I'll just state that I'm for shortening the window from 6 months down to maybe the 30-day, 60-day. But we definitely don't want to put businesses in a position where they are facing a burden. It may be difficult for a small vendor to to learn of this and then make those changes. And so I think that gives them enough time, but I wouldn't want to increase our litigation risk at all here, and that's something we should always be considering.
Councilmember George.
Did we already have comments?
I think we did, yeah. But you turned your light on, and so I thought you had something to say.
I was just jotting down notes. I think that as far as the online, and I'll just throw this out there, I really don't have my heart set one way or the other. So as long as this ordinance gets pushed through, I'll support whatever the will of the council is. But as far as the online portion, I think that one kid that has that trunk full, I think we should be scared of him because he's a scrappy kid. And if he can't get it online, he's going to find a way to get it. Mm. And with that being said, we also need to take a look at the rest of the residents in Aurora Grande. And if we have residents that we're putting out because now they can't go to a location to buy it, but they can't buy it online too, then we're also doing a disservice to the rest of the residents. So we're almost punishing the good people for what the bad people are doing.
For one scrappy kid.
Yeah, so I just kind of want to take that balance into consideration when we deliberate. But other than that, I don't have any other comments. Thank you.
Well, I would say that this council has been extraordinarily collaborative tonight on all items, and I would, if someone were to make a motion that would pull that out, I don't want to make that motion, but I would concur with the council in their compelling arguments, but I would also support shortening that window. That was not even something that it occurred to me that we could do. So perhaps someone would like to.
I would move to introduce an ordinance prohibiting the sale and distribution of electronic cigarettes and vaping products, and an ordinance prohibiting the possession of all tobacco products and paraphernalia by persons under 21. And I would shorten the wind down period to the 60 days. And then I would also request a year look back provision, a very brief summary of the data from Aurora Grande High School.
May I just request clarification?
Yes.
So on the ordinance, right now it says shall take effect and be in full force and effect 6 months after its passage. I'm going to make that 3 months, so there'll be the 30 days, and then 2 months we're giving for the purge or whatever. So I'm going to replace the six with a three.
Okay, that sounds good.
What about that? And I will need to read the ordinance title.
Yep.
Was the online aspect discussed there?
I left it out.
Well, the way that this is written, the default includes all, both.
Well, I thought there was an actual, there was, let me find it. I thought there was an actual mention.
How about a friendly amendment
online?
You can say to exclude online sales.
Sure, that's fine if that's necessary.
And if we're going to do that, I started to go through the ordinance while you were all deliberating, mm-hmm. but it's all strewn throughout these mm-hmm. definitions. I'm going to need to bring it back for mm-hmm. an introduction, I think, with it all corrected out. I don't think it's something I can just pen here tonight. The 6 months is easily done, but mm-hmm. it's thrown out the definitions.
The definition with the online sales? Mm-hmm. We can't just remove online sales from the...
Yeah. So I guess we can go ahead and introduce it, and then at the next one when we adopt it, we will have gone through right. and pulled all that out. So okay. we will be eliminating all references to online sales.
Correct.
Thank you. And then that effective date would be at the second reading, at the next meeting.
After adoption.
After mm-hmm. adoption, mm-hmm. right. And then the just making sure I'm understanding the motion, so... It would go into force and effect 30 days after adoption, but would not be enforced for 90 days, the way that you've said that.
It won't be effective until what we're proposing is 3 months after the second reading.
For the sale, but for the other part of it, it would be effective 30 days later, right?
There's two separate ordinances.
Right.
So as I'm hearing it, we're not making any changes to the possession ordinance. The only changes we're making are to the retail sale
as Councilmember Barnidge identified, which is the shorter effective date and the pull out all online sales.
So it would be 90 days from the effective date.
Yes.
I mean from
passage.
From the date of passage. Yes.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Second? Was there a second?
I think we have
Chief, yes.
Two questions that might be able to help clarification for me. First one is, when can I begin the messaging? And then when can I begin the enforcement? Now I'm confused.
Details.
Well, I would recommend you begin the messaging once the ordinance is adopted, which is also known as the second reading. So that would be in early December.
No. November 26th.
November 26th.
Aren't we introducing it? Oh, I apologize. Yeah. We'll be adopting it at the November 26th meeting. And then a regular ordinance takes 30 days, so you couldn't enforce possession until after 30 days.
Okay.
And this other one is going to have a three-month. I can give you the date specifically, so you know exactly when.
Thank you very much.
It's because there's two ordinances.
All right. Was there a second, or did I second that?
I think we're having so much fun just talking and collaborating.
Do we have any further discussion? We have a motion on the floor and a second. Can we get a roll call, please? Oh, you got to read the ordinance, don't you? Yes.
So the first ordinance is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande amending Chapter 8.36 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code to prohibit the sale and distribution to any person in Arroyo Grande electronic cigarettes and vaping products that require but have not received a Food and Drug Administration order approving their marketing. A second ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande adding Section 8.36.060 to Chapter 8.36 of Title 8 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code relating to possession of tobacco products by persons under 21.
Now, thank you for that mouthful. Can we get a roll call, please?
Mayor Pro Tem Barnidge?
Yes.
Mayor Ray Russom?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
Councilmember Shorten?
Yes.
And Councilmember George?
Yes.
Whew. That was meatier than I expected that to be tonight. Thank you, everyone. So I'm going to wait for people. Do we need to take a break?
Nope.
Okay, for council communications, I wanted to take a moment and take the chair's prerogative to go first on this. And I'm sorry that Shannon is still not here, but maybe she's at home watching. And I just wanted to acknowledge that tonight was the last night for two of our key staff members, not the least of which is sitting right in front of us and helped us through two very difficult things that our city attorney representative, Heather Whittem, is moving on to. I'm not calling them greener pastures. I'm just calling them pastures since it's
different other pastures.
Yes, different pastures. And just say that I've gotten to work with you now for 3 years. I've very much enjoyed getting to know you professionally and personally. And the city who's stolen you away from us is going to be better and luckier for it. So thank you for everything that you've done for the city of Arroyo Grande and for our city managers. I also wanted to acknowledge Shannon Essenwine, who's also leaving us. Her last day is this Friday, and I know from working with her and bugging the city manager over the last year what she has untangled here in our general ledger is nothing short of a miracle, and I wish her the very best in her new position and her new city. And she's going to be greatly missed. And I know Nicole is going to be do well stepping in as interim for now. I believe that's what's happening, right?
We're thinking about it.
All right. Sorry, Nicole. I didn't mean to. Yeah. Okay. But in any case, both Director Essenwine and our city manager, Whittem, will be greatly missed. The city attorney will be greatly missed. So thank you for your service. I don't know if anyone else would like to say anything on those two things.
I would just like to thank Shannon for her service and then and really give a shout out to Heather for her dedication and professionalism and always, always getting right back to me and answering the tough questions, and her just being a really nice and easy person to work with. So I wish you well. I think the city that has stolen you away is absolutely lucky, lucky, lucky to have you, and I hope you'll come visit.
You still live here, right?
Yeah, if I may, Mayor, I was going to say something real briefly. I don't know if now is the appropriate time.
I would just echo those comments, and specifically the fact that every time I've ever had a question, you've had a response, and a quick response and a thorough response. It's been really appreciated. So definitely going to miss you. It's been a pleasure getting to know you, and best of luck on your position with the City of Santa Maria. And then also thank you to Shannon, if you watch this, for everything you've done for our city.
Absolutely. I'll echo that. Heather, I'm calling you Heather and not City Attorney Heather, which sounds kind of weird now that I'm saying it. But thank you. Thank you for being a calm, and I say calm because every time I call you, I feel like I'm a little like, so being that calm, reasonable voice in my ear every time I needed some advice or some counsel. I always appreciate seeing you there. I get great comfort in knowing that you're there, and I know that your work is so meticulous and so thorough, and it gives me such peace of mind knowing that the city had you in our corner. So it's a loss to us to lose you, and I'll try to get you a shirt like I got Matt that says Rio Grande, I'll be back, and that's our hope. You know, we always hope, but I wish you all the best, and I know that wherever you go, your family will flourish. So thank you so much for everything.
Thank you.
Okay, my turn. I'm glad you're a resident of Rio Grande. I can picture you sitting here on Tuesday nights challenging the decisions we make up here. So, no, thank you for everything. You've been a joy to work with for the last year, and just really so many times you've been able to provide such critical information, you know, and just with the issues and telling us your frame of mind and the ability to do it in such a calm manner. There are a couple of times where I've heard information where I felt like I'm internally panicking, and then I listen to you, and it's like, oh, I feel much better now. So very fortunate to have worked with you. Santa Maria is going to be very lucky. But again, I'm glad you live here in AG, and we'll still get to see you around town. And also to Shannon, I didn't get to talk to her too much, but the times that I did, the expertise and professionalism of the information she provided was incredible, and she'll be missed as well. So opportunities for everyone.
I wasn't going to out the city you were going to, but everybody else did. But I know for a fact their council member meetings are Monday, are on first and third, and ours are second and fourth. So you can come to ours.
Well, I just really want to thank previous council and this council for giving me the opportunity to serve as city attorney. I really viewed it as a privilege and an honor, and I thoroughly enjoyed doing it. This is my hometown, or wasn't born here, but I do live here, and I'm very invested here in this community. My children go to school here, and it's just been a real honor. I've really enjoyed meeting all of you. I've really enjoyed working with the tremendous staff at the city and all of the citizens I've come across along the way. It is with a heavy heart that I leave. I've been serving as city attorney almost 5 years, and I've really enjoyed it. But I'm comforted knowing that the city is in great hands with Jim Bergman at the head, and your hardworking and dedicated staff. I leave you in good hands. And, yeah, I live here, so I'll still be around, and I just thank everyone very much.
Can we clap?
Thank you, sure. Heather.
I'm clapping for you, Shannon. Any other council communications?
I have one. I'd like to thank the city for providing the opportunity for Council Member Storton and I to attend the economic forecast this past Friday. I just wanted to share some fun statistics with you, whether you think it's fun or not. I'll leave that up to you.
Depends on what it is.
Exactly. So the main thing was housing. And it was an interesting conversation about whether the need is for affordable housing or just the fact that we don't have the supply of housing. And so that was an interesting take at, because, you know, everyone says affordable housing, but really it's the supply. We just don't have enough housing to begin with. But he had some fun numbers for us. The average wage increase in the county was 3.7%. The average consumer spending increased by 2.7%. The average household personal savings rate is at an all-time high of 8%. So those numbers looked good. And the median credit score is 750 in our county.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
So... good time. I enjoyed being there. And the Central Coast employment growth rate is 34.2%. And it would be higher if we had housing. So I'll just leave it at that.
Well, okay. Oh, see, I knew it.
No, I got nothing.
Oh,
I got nothing. I'm just waiting patiently. Look, it's only 9.
Yay. All right. Well, I'm going to just blow it really fast and just say, you know, this... tonight is a perfect example of if people are still watching, then they're the junkies, and I want to talk to you anyway. Mm-hmm. This council works so hard, and I've been doing this since Planning Commission in 2005. It's been nearly 15 years, and I cannot express to you at home that when you watch us tonight debate, and there was debate tonight, and there was passion tonight, and there was... dissent, and there was discussion, and all the people that are sitting to my right and left are so professional and so dedicated, and we will come to the dais next time with no ill feelings and ready to work and ready to debate if that's necessary and concur when it's not. And I am just so humbled every time we have nights like this when I sit here with such great professionals. And I just wanted to take a moment under council communications to communicate directly to the council that I hope that the people at home are seeing that very same thing. And if they're listening to me, then I'm guaranteeing you that that is what's happening here. And I'm just so appreciative of it. So thank you to everyone.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. So with that, 13, we had closed session earlier tonight. So that takes us to item 14, adjournment.
Always, for sure. You have no idea. Thank you for participating.